Honorable Members, Ladies and Gentlemen, Honorable Minister, we welcome you to our Portfolio Committee meeting. We really appreciate the fact that you are here. We know that you are busy, but it's always appreciated to have you amongst ourselves. As we believe that the issues that is discussed in the Portfolio Committee, we usually say when you are in the pot, you don't know what's happening. It's people who are outside who can actually show you what is actually happening in there. So we really appreciate your presence today. We are starting the process today, and we would appreciate if the Honorable Minister would give us a political overview. It's not something that's in our agenda, but it will really be appreciated because we believe that it's important to have before the DG presents, we would give an opportunity to the minister to give us a political overview. There are a number of issues, Honorable Minister, that are arising from our previous meetings. Because as we discuss issues in the Portfolio Committee, we ask the department to provide us with more information, because we believe that oversight is about information. And if we have information, our oversight function is hampered. And this, I don't know whether you were informed that before we start, we are going to provide the department with an opportunity of responding to the matters that arise from our previous meeting, because the information that was requested by committee from the department, that makes it easy for us to do our oversight. When you give us information, we then are able to do our constitutional mandate of overseeing what the department and the entities are doing. On the documents that we had asked as the Portfolio Committee to receive documents at least 10 days before the meeting. We are struggling to achieve this. The department is not providing us with the information that is required timely. That hampers the work that we're doing as the member of the Portfolio Committee. And we've made it clear to the department and the entities that if they give us information, we work around the information that they are given. And we are receiving a document here. And I would like the DG to tell us if the documents that we have just received are additional information, the information that I requested from the DG. Because we did receive a presentation from the department, and we have been working on the presentation that we received. And that's an explanation that this is additional information. The presentation says that it's empty, and this is just additional information. We would like to hear that explanation from the DG. Before we allow the minister to do the political overview, I'm going to give you an opportunity, DG, to respond to the matters that arise from the last meeting that we had. Do you have the list of? Okay, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The matters arising, the first issue is the list of social cohesion advocate. That list is ready, and So it's became philosophically advocate as we speak, and we are in the process of including and widening the list of social cohesion advocates. And similarly, in terms of the list of schools participating in the artist in schools program, it's also available. And also the communities that have had a conversation and SMB. So now, the approach around community conversations is changing. So this would be the past report of what has happened, but also then the approach that we're taking is more thematic and actually would be utilizing the conversations to be able to contribute to official social content, and therefore the way that the conversations are chosen would also be dependent on the topic. And so we are really looking at that and how do we measure impact, because we don't, in the past we were not able to it was almost you go to a conversation but there could be any topic raised, which is what happens with this and these. But with the conversations now we distinguish between the conversation around the themes, but then with regard to this and these, it has to be open so that you allow the people-to-people interaction and people to be the ones raising the issues. And also we have provided the detailed report on the cultural seasons. Now, the report that has been provided is around the French season, which has been then completed on both sides, where the South African and the French lakes have been done. There are two seasons that are currently underway, which is the China season. So we had last year SATs in China, and this year is the other lake. So we don't have a comprehensive report to be able to then look at the impact. And similarly, with the UK seasons, we are now having the South Africa, the UK lake happening now. So therefore we only have completed only one lake. So those are currently those in progress, but the completed report on the French season has been provided.
Thank you very much, DG. But when we ask for information as a committee, we always believe that the information is there already. For instance, if you say, can we have a list of those schools that you have access in? We believe that it's something that you can give us tomorrow or even at the end of the day. At the end of the business day, we get the list. But we discussed this a week or so ago or 2 weeks ago, but we still don't have a list since then. The lists are still going to be provided. And I think really it's not acceptable. It's important that when the committee asks for information is given to us immediately, because of the reason why we want to get information. We're not doing it just for the sake of doing it. So I would really urge the department to respond fast so that we are able to deal with the information. For instance, now we are still going to receive the information, and in our next meeting, maybe it's when we will discuss, and time is against us. But thank you very much for the response. Honourable members, are there any questions on the issues? There being none, because we don't have the list. So we will wait until we get the list and all this information. Because the reason why we want to have the list and to see where these artists are, as we usually say in the portfolio committee, we are coming from different provinces. We are coming from different, we have different constituencies. We want to assist you to say if there is an artist in my area, I want to assist you by going there and look at the impact, and as the member, we come back and tell you that this is working or this is not working. Can you try something else? So I think it's important for you to give us the information so so that if your work is made this one. Then in with members having no questions, I will now give over to the minister to give an overview. There are a few areas, Minister, that we have identified from the APT, and we have questions ready for. We are hoping that maybe you'll find time that even after you've given your overview, you'll find time to listen to DG's presentation and the questions that the honorable members will have at the end of the presentation of the DG. Because we do have questions and there are a number of concerns that we are having around the issues that are in the APT. So we are hoping that you will find time just to listen. I do not waste time with more talk. I would like the minister to give us the portal overview of this. Over to you, Minister.
Thanks, Chair, and good morning, honourable members. We want to start from the onset by affirming that we do have an interest, Chair, to know how both the threat plan and the APP is received, particularly by the stakeholders, like the CERDs, who are the committee and in charge of our work of arts and culture. But thank you, Chair. We meet at a very crucial time in our country where matters of transformation, particularly around the national heritage landscape is very much a topic in our country, and it's not really surprising that is the case, because in any game of change, signs and symbols become important. So we understand the edge on the matter from that point of view. But we need to foreground our intervention in this meeting by emphasizing the point that what we see happening, especially about the statues, is a broader issue of transformation. And it's not something which is happening for the first time. There is a program. Government, since the new dispensation, has embarked on a process to transform the landscape. If you go around the country, you will see a lot of things have changed. They have changed in some instances in a sense that people take them for granted. People take for granted that, for instance, there is a province called Limpopo today, which was not there. It was Northern Transvaal, and so on and so forth. And there's a city, a town called the Bulukwane, which was Petersburg in the past. There's a province called Free State, and when you get to that province, you go through the airport called Bram Fischer. Anybody who comes to South Africa goes through an airport which was once known as the Unsmart Airport. It is called O.R. Tambo today. Or you try to go to KwaZulu-Natal, there was a Louis Botha Airport. It is Kinshasa today. I'm just mentioning those few things to make the point that things did not start with the call for the fall of the Silicon Road. It's a process. It's ongoing since the new dispensation, as we said, but in 2011, the cabinet took a decision that the Department of Arts and Culture should lead a process of the Malaysian Heritage Group, which has started already, if you look at what is happening with the provinces like Eastern Cape, Omar Tambo kind of remembrance and the museum there. But even before that, you have the Cradle of Four in the Eastern Cape. One of my first assignments as I was given this responsibility, I went to Nguzahi, very historic here in the liberation struggle and the quest for freedom for our people. There is no part of the country which has not been affected by change. Many municipalities are named after our leaders. They are Jaitas Moroka, they are Pixie, Sakaseme, they are this, that, and the other. You go to the Eastern Cape, there is a memorialization of Sleep Biko, especially in the continent, and so on. So the process is on. And I think we must make that point very clear, so that there is no temptation to think that, as other people are suggesting, that government has not done anything. Leaders, in their own right, as leaders in local government, in provincial governments, and so on, have taken initiatives, and there are even new initiatives as we speak. The province of Northwest, for instance, after the repatriation of the Slang Salons, Max and Godan, they are pondering around the idea of naming that particular province after one of the standards, which is Godan. So it's an ongoing project. It's in that context that we should say that when we met last day, our very first contact, which was a budget vote, we did see that this is one of the important areas for us, the area of the heritage landscape. The fact of the matter is that South Africa's heritage landscape is viewed by and large through the prism of our Eswatini colonizers, and that has to change. It has to change with times. It has to change within the parameters, the legislative parameters we have, but change has to happen. And for it to happen, it has to happen in a particular context, in a context of respecting dignity of all our people, as we make the point that South Africa belongs to all who live in it, united in our diversity. Our goal is to build a united nation. And in the process of building this united nation, there are things we need to look into. It's not a matter of black people dominating white people in South Africa. Our Polish law star, which was adopted 6 years ago, the Freedom Charter, emphasized this point we are making in the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, that there are things we are not going to change. There never was a view of this government to drive the white men into the sea. There's no such a project. A project is how do we, after the conflict of the past, after a negotiated transition, how do we find a way of living together? Living together and together, convincing each other and entering into dialogue and deepening dialogue amongst ourselves. We have community conversations which are ongoing, spearheaded by the Department of Arts and Culture. Because precisely of the fact that without deepening dialogue with Julian and Mark, we'll never be able to find each other. There has to be a way where you are saying that here is a Mandela, and this is what Mandela did for this country and for humanity in general. And we think that what Mandela did has to be memorialized in the seat of power, in the Union Building. And we've got to find a way of getting into conversation with people that supported Barry Herzog, and say to them that, no, but the fact of the matter is that we are transforming our society. And this is a symbol of transformation, Mandela. Herzog is not a symbol of transformation. This is the seat of power of a democratically elected government. And therefore, Herzog should not be destroyed, but should give way to Mandela. So that anybody who interacts with South Africa in 2015 would be interacting with South Africa, not of Herzog, is not going to be greeted by Herzog as we go to the seat of power. But Mandela will be there, because Mandela led this struggle for freeing the people of South Africa, all of them, black and white. And that conversation led to what you see. So the sensitivity should continue to be there. We should not say that now, because we are in power, going to do away with everything. Every symbol, every sign has to be looked into on its merits. That is why we then said that we are saying that this issue debate came at the right time when there is an ongoing change. It didn't come in the vacuum. There is an ongoing change. But it should be broadened, because it's not about statues. You can take out all the statues today and tomorrow you wake up and no statues. But what are the fundamental underlying issues? Statues are a metaphor for a bigger debate in our society, debate on transformation. Let's take UCT for instance. I think students should be commended by taking this step of raising this matter. This person called Cecil John Rhodes, who was a colonizer, a politician, a business person, an imperialist in thinking and deed. And they say, look, at this stage you should go. It doesn't mean that there is no good thing which you can count that Cecil John Rhodes did. But fundamental who Cecil John Rhodes was, that imperialist thinking, that white supremacist domination, as President Mugabe would say, that we share something between Zimbabwe and South Africa, where the state today is the grave of the very same person. But they've raised the matter. The point we're making was that we are not operating in a vacuum, we're not a lawless society. There are laws in this country. What students did, he thought about a long time ago and put in place mechanisms to deal with that. So therefore, a process has to be followed, which we started there with the authorities and the students and so on, but we still have to go via the agency. So that's the point we are making there. But we are saying that this day to matter did not come in a vacuum, because we did report last year that one of the things we want to do in changing the heritage landscape is to build a hero's acre in South Africa. And that national monument, we have identified the site, the process is on, in Gauteng, in Tswane, because when we don't connect with what is happening or has happened, people who think that the issue of the statue is an matter which is coming now. We are talking of hundreds of statues which have never happened anywhere else in the world, which are going to be found in one place, in the Cyril's Acre we spoke about last year. Starting from the pre-colonial era to the colonial era to 1994. And this is the project we are busy with. So we're saying to the students, for instance, at UCT, welcome to the party. Let's work together and shape the heritage landscape in our country. Again, we can't forget and choose to ignore what is happening where African brothers are at each other's throats. We need to see that any discriminatory practices has to be condemned, and we should develop programs to extra dividend. That is why we commend the province of KwaZulu-Natal, led by Premier Mbunu, who has led the action to respond to what is happening there. But again, related to the center, we reached this thing last year, and we said there is a lot of work which we need to do as South Africans to connect and reconnect with our own continent. An ordinary South African, when he or she visits one of the countries in the continent, would say, I was in Africa. I mean, it becomes something, you know, automatically people do. And you ask a question, you were in Africa, coming where from? You know, because South Africa is Africa. And that mindset has to change, because people think that when they talk and construct their thoughts in South Africa, South Africa is elsewhere. It is in Africa, it's part of Africa. This is why we said last year, one of the things we are going to do and want to be the feature of the of South African body politics is to declare the month May as Africa Month. Not just declare it, but come up with a program from day one to the last day, with the highlight on the 25th of May, because this was the day when the Organization of African Unity was formed in 1963. But we believed that we have not done much as South Africa and as Africa in commemorating this very important milestone of our history, because OAU main objective was to unite all of us as Africans, was to decolonize Africa. And when OAU turned 50, almost all the countries of the continent were liberated, had achieved their independence, thanks to the exception of Western Sahara, which I think all of us have a duty to call for its independence from Morocco. And I think that point has to be made all the time, because our forebears are turning their graves to say that the work they have done, those who came under them are not continuing that. We should pay attention to the question of Western Sahara. But by and large, our forebears have done a lot of it. So that's why we should continue that task. The task of uniting society is a process always under construction. You never say you are done with it, because one day this particular discrimination will come through racism, through xenophobia, through homophobia, sexism, and so on and so forth. So that would be continuous. Now, when we reached this thing last year, it was not responding to anybody. It was not responding to what we see happening here. It was a commitment, was it? And indeed, the inaugural Africa Month is happening in South Africa next month. 81 countries have confirmed they are going to be part of this, because our vision is that at the end of the day, we have to rotate this Africa Month. And we have seen this boldly, so we are Africa, opening the doors of learning and culture from Cape to Cairo. Precisely because, one, we are celebrating the 60th year of the Freedom Charter, but at the same time, we are galvanizing our society for unity of our continent, throughout the continent as well. So, Chair, I think that those programs for us will be able to undermine some of the things which are happening in our society today. Our program, therefore, both the strategic plan and the APP, has to speak to these things so that at the end of the day, we are able to look back and say, we've made commitments here. How far have we gone with those commitments? We seek to transform the entire sector of arts, culture, and heritage, not only heritage. With the Asian culture, for instance, once the thing was shared to the practitioners and creative workers, was that for anything to happen, you've got to be organized. The president made this call very clear to them in 2009. And we can record now, as we said last year, that we are committed to ensure that this sector is transformed, is organized. We can confirm that we have contributed in ensuring that a federation is born, and it was born this year. And it's through this federation, CISA, the Creative and Cultural Federation of South Africa, it's through this federation that we are going to see the voice, the voiceless voice of the arts and cultural activities be heard in South Africa. It's through them, and as we met them even after their inaugural conference, it's through them that the shaping of our review of the white paper will find content, because it's there, it's about them, and they will be participating, and they've committed themselves to participate so that at the end of the day, we transform the sector. We should not have a situation where people willingly are able to hire and fire artists and cultural activities like that, and nothing happens. We should reach a point where we no longer talk of artists dying purpose. And why is that? And part of the reason has been that people have been working in silos. And the Federation is an organization which has to unite them to raise their matters, sharply in society, with government, with everybody else. So we are comfortable then on the fact that we are having a voice now, which will match other sectors. The sector, for instance, of the agricultural sector is regulated. There's particular determinations. You would know that if you hire somebody in that sector, say in a city like Cape Town, how much that person should be paid. It's regulated. Go to the domestic workers training. When it comes here to arts and culture, you still have to ensure that. That is why this process of reviewing the white paper would really urge even a portfolio committee to participate vigorously, so that at the end of the day, we have a monument which would say that the people who have been struggling all these years, who have faced all these hardships, would find a way to say that when they talk of Ma Miriam Makeba, for instance, or Ma Dorothy Masuku, or Kaifa Sulenya, or Donna Brandt, Abdullah Ibrahim, or Shuma Sela and others, would say that their struggle was not in vain. Their struggle, the new generation has been able to take up their fight. So that's change. And as we conclude, to emphasize the point for the project of nation building and social cohesion, that we have gone beyond the issue of having social cohesion advocates. We had a social cohesion summit in 2012, which then we had to have a follow-up summit before the financial year 2014-2015 end, which we did have, just to take stock of how far we've gone in this project. The project is on the engagement of society, is on. We are out there in our communities with community organizations. The one for tomorrow continues the dialogue. Because tomorrow we're saying there are topical issues. But let's broaden the discussion. Let's get to the bottom. The issue here is fundamentally economic justice. As we are in the second phase of our transition, where we talk radical economic transformation, the issues are by and large around there. Whether we're talking about what you would call xenophobia or Afrophobia in the townships and villages, you'll see that there is some trace on issues of economic distress in localities. But it doesn't give anybody the right to attack other people. We are known as South Africans as having engaged for our trust. When people spoke of a miracle, they spoke of our superiority to reign above objects in society, to reign above narrow things which hold us in our small corners. And we're very confident, Chair, that our sheer devotion to ensure that we build a new nation, a united nation, we achieve our strategic objective of a united, non-racial, non-sexist, democratic and prosperous South Africa is achieved, would be achieved through our efforts, through our actions. Of course, the society will always have opportunities. There will be people who will dive into the bandwagon of very fundamental and genuine interests of our people. We need to understand that we would have those amongst us in society. But what becomes our task is to be above them, is to find a way of overshadowing them. They may be making a lot of noise in our society, a noise which is toxic in the sense that it's not going to contribute in building a society. There's something which is very easy to do. Destroying something is very easy. But building takes a lot. And I think that we should not choose line of opportunism or demagogy. We should stick to a very principled line of building a united nation, because that is in the interest of us and generations to come. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister. In our meeting on Tuesday, as the Portfolio Committee, we had discussion on the matter of defacing and randomization of the statues. And we wanted to come up with a common position as the Portfolio Committee. And we had a very heated argument, a very heated discussion around that issue. But at the end of the discussion, we all condemned the actions. We said as the Portfolio Committee, we encourage people to use the legal processes that are there to solve any problem that people are experiencing. We had that heated argument, but as the Portfolio Committee, we came up with a common statement that we condemn the vandalization, but what we are stressing is that people should use the available processes, legal processes. People should act within the legal framework that is there. This is what the Portfolio Committee decided upon on Tuesday. But as we are going to get a presentation from the DG, we want to see, Minister, how the programs of the department are going to speak to the issues that are within communities. This is why we want detailed information. We have asked the DG to provide the committee with detailed information. If you are saying we are going to have community conversation of that, we want to understand what is it that is within this community conversation. What are they conversing about? So I've asked the DG to give us that information. I'm going to give now an opportunity to members just to ask questions or make comments on the overview of the minister. Honourable members? Honourable Makhonda?
Thank you, Chen. We want to welcome the presentation by the minister around the transformation agenda which is taking place in South Africa. we are greater that indeed what is happening in South Africa, which relates to the issues of statehood. It's part of the transformation agenda, even though it's not guided by the legislation. But we wish to emphasize the point that the transformation agenda in South Africa shared, it is taking place very slowly. That's why we have got a situation where people decide to bring an attack. We're seeing very little of government leading the issue of name changes. When you look around the country, the only province that even the minister has emphasized is Limpopo, where it's gone beyond the expectation in terms of name changes. The other provinces, the process is very slow. We understand that we might not do as the previous government was doing, because we find a situation where, for example, how name Lutuhad was named to me. Just a leader, a full-track leader who has the established a time when he named that town Lutuhad. The same as Petersburg, Grand Town, and so forth. You see, the manner in which government processes are very slow are slower than the processes of ordinary people. You see, people will arrive in a particular place, load that place, name it after what they decided to name. Then the other processes will fall. In 1993, we had Mandela, Ramaphosa, and all those things. But we are saying, as government, we need to fast track the transformation agenda so that people do not lose patience. We understand that government is going to build the big museum and a big monument, which is part of the program of government. But also, we need also to fast-track the issue of land changes in the country. When you come to big cities, it's very strange where you find that street names after 21 years are still named after apartheid leaders. At least we can appreciate what is happening in the land. You have seen street names being changed, named after our heroes. Struggles. I appreciate that. But in some other provinces, that process is taking place, and we wish that the government should take a lead. Thanks.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Honorable members, is there any other comment? Honorable Mashobin.
Thanks, Chair. As Honorable Makoro said, the process was so slow on this thing of removing the statue. It was supposed to be done long time ago. And as you mentioned, Chair, that last day we did have a discussion, a serious one. I understand we do have some different views according to this thing of moving the statues. But as a department, we must come to one stage. How are we going to deal with these things? Because even I do have my own views according to these statues. But if I'm in a committee, we have a one stage. Mine, I would say, we cannot have the social commission everywhere we go. That is the comment. As I said, must come with anyone and every community. We see the symbol of our own oppression. This department, through its agencies, has done nothing to celebrate the heroes. I don't say the ruling party did nothing to celebrate about the council, about the statues, because it was something that was supposed to be done a long time ago. The heroes, this department through its agencies has done nothing to celebrate the heroes of own struggle for liberation. We have statues of Queen Elizabeth here. Instead, objectives of Mamuini Matikizela Manela, and also as the Tina Shulu and Veronica Shobuke and others. So as a department, we must fight that. We must, with one stand, I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member, Honorable Mokhotli, and Honorable Tshude today.
And I thank you, and thank you. I will keep what we're doing at this speaker. We must say the process, there is many process moving into consciousness. So, but it's very sophisticated again. We talk about issues of wisdom, issue of procedure, other people's wisdom, like us, 20 years in democracy. And as we said, that the process must be done quicker and finish everything in 20 years. It can be. And there are processes that are there. The only pressure maybe that we are facing now is the issue of the student of rules. Because what they came with, you know, it becomes a such issue when the people from higher learning institutions take this process forward, the government or the committee will be shaking to say, now this is a class that is going to talk about academias and understand the process of transformation. Like taking a layman from Soweto or me from Soweto, how do you understand what the process is? How is this in a new mall time, say, it's Makonya mall, Trinity is all nice, or now we are having a mall, a name after one of our businesses in Soweto. But what you can say maybe to the department is to say, let the process be open. Let me have awareness of the program, go to the media. You know, the Facebook that these young people are using, the Twitter, put a statement to say that the department, this is where we are, the process, this is how many stages that you have to move. And here in the last committee meeting, I think we could claim as this committee to say social cohesion, unity and community is what that we wanted to see as this committee. As much as there's a pressure that is amounting there. But we won't say that there's nothing that has been done. The removal of health is a significant, very, very big step that the government has taken. And so one would say, maybe the department, with the pressure that is coming, let us not allow going to another class because we won't even take it. Let us take it quicker, then share with people that is happening. Awareness is program. Call the individuals, the individuals that we are talking about, take them down to the people. And start well out, because as you see that now in the institution, those ones are very clear. They are good in IT then. They can allude what is happening there. So let us not leave the school interfering and the problem, we cannot even control it. But as a community chair, last time we discussed this in detail and we said that it is important if this committee comes with a joint statement to say the committee of agriculture, this is our state. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Honorable Sudip.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the input that has been made by the Minister and also congratulate the Department on the launch of the Federation on the Creative Industry. Actually, it's really long overdue. We have been waiting for that to happen. Then I just want to have a question on that one, on the issue of funding. I really want the Minister to elaborate more on how this federation is going to be funded and perhaps who is going to be responsible for looking after the money, because in my understanding, if they are funded through the money that is appropriated, Chairperson, they also have to have an account on the money that is not being given. If you can, they can elaborate more on that. Chairperson, also perhaps to on the issue of the statute, I just want to say to the department should really strengthen the communication strategy. Because one could say that there was a lot of vacuum that was left, and once there is a vacuum, opportunistic people will just occupy that. In some areas, you find that there is something that is happening in terms of the nation, in terms of the removal of the statute, but communities around that area do not really know what is happening.
maybe already from now, they need to communicate what has happened, what is going to happen in the future, so that people should know that their process is held in there. Like now, a lot of people, a lot of citizens, they think that the removal of the statue is something that is beginning now. Yet when you look throughout the history, the 21 years of democracy, there were statues that were removed. Legal show, there were processes that were followed. But our people do not know necessarily that those processes, the removal of the statues, it's not a new thing. It's a thing that has been happening since the dawn of democracy. Even the issue of also the issue of the defacing. When you listen to the Russians, we do not agree with the defacing of the statue. This issue has always been happening. When the names were changed, some of the statues of our own heroes, they were defaced and nothing was said. Even the media was not as outspoken as they are now. The statues are not defaced for the first time, they've always been defaced. You can go to a new town, around the town. Those statues that were there, some time ago, they were defaced. The name changes. The name will be changed. A street name will be changed. Simply because a certain group of minorities do not agree with that name. That name, the next day, you find the name being removed, or you find the name being defaced. But now, that is not communicated. It's like now it's a new thing that is starting. Simply because few of those statues are beginning to be defaced. As much as we do not agree with that. But the media should also assist in terms of communicating the real issues. They communicate as if the same people are now beginning to do that. Yes, the same people who are contesting against the defacing of the statues, they did it with the statues of our own heroes. When they were placed, they were defaced, threatening, the same thing has happened. So, listen, my point is, the department creates the communication with and our citizens depend on the communication that comes from the department. All that I say, they are lacking. Even the processes, some of the people, of our people do not really know the processes that needs to be followed, as much as it's also our responsibility as public office bearers to communicate to our constituents. But the department is in a better place to make sure that they really communicate to our people. On the intersection of the issue of the renovated public archive, the Department of Arts and Culture is at the core of social cohesion. Now, I just want to also have a question on that issue, whether the Department of Arts and Culture does it work hand in hand with the Department of Home Affairs in order to make sure that there is some sort of integration of these foreign people within the communities in South Africa.
Thank you very much. We are still going to have the presentation from the department, but Minister, if you can just respond to the issues that have been raised by members, briefly.
Thanks. Let me start with the last intervention to say that the government has been saying organize yourselves, you artists, because part of the reason why you can't achieve what you want to achieve in all working lives. But then a challenge came from the artists themselves. They said, no, but government says we must be organized, but nobody is helping us. Together to be organized. So government committed that no, we'll help you to come together. Then you will have to see yourselves, because you are a force, you are a federation, you represent a constituency. How you survive, that should be between yourselves and your constituents. Our government is to, opening the environment, make it conducive for you to do your job. So the agreement then with them was that for this last year, this year, and next year, we are helping them to set themselves up. Beyond that, we would have parted ways in terms of assisting. So that tomorrow, nobody would say we don't walk the talk as government. So that's what would happen. What's happening with them, the sister. The point you are raising is fundamental. That's to we don't communicate. I think it's a broader government activity of not being able to communicate even things. You see, you go to communities and people say, no, you know, since 1994, nothing has happened here. And this person is coming from a house which he got from the program of government. He's in a hall. I just forgot it. He's in a hall. The pastor will meet him under the tree. There's a community hall. It's when you remind people, let's say what you think is obvious, has to be said. So I think if we do that and communicate that way, the way we do, we'll be able to make the point I'm making, you made earlier on, that this thing is not starting with Rose Must Fall. It started a long time ago. Government has created the environment for people. And by the way, when you say arts and culture is fast track, you must be specific. Because arts and culture ministry is an appropriate body. When people who apply that I stay here, this place is called Louis Dreyfus. But before Louis Dreyfus came, there was a king here called Makado. And it's Makado case, this one. This Louis Dreyfus came when Makado was here. This Pretorius came when Swane was here. People in, it's not a department. What we have to do is to inform, give more information to people on what happens out there and so on. How to follow the process, how have these things been done. It was correct to say that Limpopo leads the act in terms of the transformation and the changing of names of different sites, people and so on. But you're also correct, you know that defacing is a big issue now. There are street names even today which are defaced, if there's anything defacing of a street name. Immediately when you go to a Tegwin, for instance, there's not a single street there which is not renamed. But there's always been a struggle. You put this word tomorrow, it's not there. People came with this graffiti and everything. But you are correct. It hasn't been taken up as much as things are now from the media point of view. So you are correct on that. But as you say, that it can be condoned, no matter who's doing it and so on. Yes, the processes are complex, and we should not speak about the history we come from. Apartheid machinery faced the liberation movement in a protracted struggle. But even before that, there were wars of resistance. And our breakthrough was a negotiated transition. And we must factor that in. Negotiated, and when people say you have this constitution in the world, which is an envy of democracy, the world over, it didn't come easy. It came out of a negotiated settlement. And I think we should underline the point that our quest for freedom was not so that one faction dominates the other or changes the thing, whether it's black or white. It never was about that. And nobody would argue against the fact that you've got to have more of the signs and symbols of the time, even though some of them would, would take for granted. You know, people take for granted, thinking that, oh, our Tambo International Airport was always there. It wasn't. There was something called the Yanswati Airport. You know, and even when the process was initiated to change, there's been resistance. In Swan, there is resistance. So I'm saying that each matter has to be taken on its merit. We can't be coming up with a one-size-fits-all. But we've got to do whatever we do to answer a question. Are we committed in building a united nation? And if we are, what are these things which are going to be the do's and the don'ts? What are the bottom lines? Where do we connect? You know, today, a language called Afrikaans, which students in 1976 rebelled against their use as a medium of instruction. Is one, you won't find Afrikaans anywhere else in the world. It has been part of the history of this country. And many people speak this language, not only in white servants, but even in townships. Some of the townships people communicate in Afrikaans, as an example. That you have those things which are here. You have 11 languages which are official in the country. Could have easily decided, no, we do away with English and Afrikaans. But we understood that we are all South Africans, and South Africa belongs to an Afrikaner child much as it would belong to an African child. How do we leave a legacy which would not be a perpetual conflict within our country? That it doesn't matter whether you appear brown, black, or white, or whatever. When people see South Africa, they see South Africans. And what are the unifying perspectives for South Africans? And it must fit in the discussion as well. Because if we take a decision that no, away with the white people and white symbols, we want ours. Surely, that would be against the grain and the spirit of a dispensation we were fighting for and we would rely in, which is a constitutional democracy. So I think that from that point of view, we should say that we need to not to tire in talking. We need to talk. We are from the other side. We are here now. Let's find a way of engaging on and sun in our society. But that engagement is not unending. It has to be an engagement, like for instance, the engagement with the Herzog. It started, it ended. You start and you end, and that's it. Now, I think on the pace of government, I think we are very comfortable to criticize on what needs to be done with the legislative framework we have. People say, no, but this thing is a problem. For instance, if you apply for a name change, removal of state or whatever, and so on, within the legislation, you need to have 30 days of consultation. It doesn't matter how much strong you feel about traveling. You want these people who don't want to go in time. But those who don't want you to go have to be engaged. And we should not be afraid to engage. Because it's through that other people get educated about who Don Rose is. I mean, other people only knew the name Don Rose when people talk Rose Mandela Cooperation and the Foundation and so on. But you've got to do that. So if you criticize the processes and say this is how things should happen, then it's fine. But for from the side of government were put here on the table, that here are the parameters. Oh, that's why you are correct to say Limpopo leads the pack. I think immediately to Mpumalanga, which would be number two. It's not that structure. It's people who know who have about the east or was in Mpumalanga, who then approach the agent. They don't approach the Department of Ministry. They come here where there is a conflict, there is a challenge. So we can't evolve in that particular process at the beginning. Because at the end of the day, people must come and appeal to the Minister of Arts and Culture. So if you start engaging an initial process, a referendum there, and they are doing something which you are not supposed to do. So from that point of view, what we can say, I think that's the point we should say, that our leaders in our municipalities and in our provinces should fast track the process. Because the process is there, the parameters are there. It's for them to play. The game plan is put on the table. The National Heritage Resources Act, number 25 of 99, is there. If there are anything with it, because we also observe one of the things which we've got to show in this process is the capacity. You know, for instance, now we're talking of statues, like we've never spoken about them before, at all. So what is going to happen when everybody comes now in our line, in terms of the capacity? And those are the things we've got to deal with. But with the law, I think the law is very clear, and I agree with the Honourable Member that what we need is to come up with an approach which will be an approach unifying us first and foremost as the sector, as the portfolio committee, that this is our view. Our view is that we've got to change the heritage landscape in our country. The definition of the landscape has not should change from being defined from the prison or through the prison of our SY colonizers. The domination, as I said, that as you learn in South Africa, you learn at OR, that's a good start. If you learn that using smaller planes, you learn at Brown Fisher in the state or Kingshark. We still have to look into others. So here, leadership has been provided from the national level. Well, the plane, the good plane is here. Let people, let our leaders, take time and formulate the process, because part of the problem is that if you do your rush, people are going to take you on the technicality to court. And then you think you would have changed, you go back to what it was before. So it's very important that we also play our role in informing the public about the actual workings of the plan itself, of the SSF. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. I'm now going to give over to the DG to do the presentation, but before I do that, I think what has come out of the discussion is that we need to communicate more. We need to communicate better, because communication is key in any relationship. If you don't communicate, there is a problem. So it's important for us to communicate with our communities, for the department to communicate the processes, for us to communicate the law, the legal framework within which we should operate. Because it's important to let communities know that there is law, there are processes that are legal, that they can use to achieve whatever they want to achieve. I think that is very important. And I think when we meet again, we need to look at what strategy are we going to employ to ensure that we communicate. I think we need to, that is our starting point in our next meeting. I'm now going to give over to DG to present the APP and for him to first explain the three documents that we have submitted this morning, because the rule is that
documents that are going to be discussed in the portfolio committee should be submitted 10 days before the actual date of the meeting. Over to you, Gigi.
Thank you, Chair. The documents that are added, so are just an amplification on the core content, and also we table the actual reports, the strategy plan for 5 years, and also the APP, which has all the detail. However, to enrich the understanding, because most of these will be numbers, but it will not give the members the projects that are tangible, so those are just included to amplify on projects so that it gives it life. However, we're sticking to the presentation that was sent. So, honorable members, I'll be taking you through two documents, the strategic plan and the annual performance plan. And I think what is quite critical is being able to explain how it went about when we looked at the plan. And it was not really about only the department, it was also about the center. And the importance of that is that close to 80% of our budget in most entities, and therefore they need to be involved in being able to give input into the process. And then as the department then overlooks the activities, then can then be able to do the accountability. And then also, the minister has been able to set up this strategic posture, and to also be looking at this law mandate in the department. And so we'll quickly go through those and look at the policy context of the DAC plans, alignment to two critical documents, the NDP and the MTSF, the 2014-2019 MTSF. And then we then go into the details of what are the key challenges, and then how do we then utilize the policy priorities to be able to deal with the key challenges in our strategic response of the DAC, but also as a sector broadly. And then we can then go into the details of the programs. And the way we would proceed, I would be able to go into the broader issues and then allow the program managers to then give more detail, and that's where those presentations would then help in being able to detail the programs and give it life for the members. So the strategic process that we went through is very consultative, not only within the department, but also with our entities. And we had two critical engagements in this with the heritage sector in Durban and also with the arts and culture sector in Cape Town. And then we then brought all these together with the department in a third consultation. And then we had refinement, and then we also had auditors who engaged and gave us input. We also had DVME give us input before we finalized, and then we then finalize, so that what came and what is the result is that it's something that can be doable, that is aligned with the broader NTSM program, and that can also be auditable. And because we also took into account the audit findings of previous years, so that we can be able to refine our targets and be able to measure the impact. And the critical thing, and the minister has been able to outline the strategic poster, in that the DAC acts to lead nation building and also social cohesion. And this is actually shown now in current times how important that role is. But also that we need to preserve, protect, and develop South African arts, culture, and heritage. And those are critical. We have to look at the entire value chain. And as custodians, need to make sure that there's preservation, protection, and development, and those are critical elements. But also, the reality that we have is that budgets are being cut, so we need to use our resources very effectively and be able to do with less. And so we need to start thinking our ways of working, that we can be able to make sure that we get value for money. But also, we need to be looking at effective oversight and monitoring of our public entities, because they comprise an extent. Therefore, we need to be able to make sure that we have effective oversight and monitoring. And also, we need to be looking at the radical socio-economic transformation as we are looking into critical economic signals such as job creation, youth empowerment, broad-based like economic empowerment, because people are going to be asking, you're talking about these things, but can you see them now? And therefore, our programs must top those tangible benefits that can be measured, that can be seen by the communities, and hence the communication becomes very critical to make sure that it can be seen and actually felt and people can know about. And we have a vision and a mission. What is critical is that this sector must be a dynamic, vibrant, and transformed arts, culture, and heritage sector, leading nation building through social cohesion and economic, socio-economic inclusion. And when we look, also critical are the values. What are the values that are going to be governing our day-to-day engagement? And of course, the Constitution forms the foundation, and then we extract these values in our daily engagement in terms of how are we actualizing the constitutional values in our day-to-day work. And I'd like to spend some time on saying, now we also need to focus what are the goals that will then be able to guide us to say what are we working towards. So we would like to, we're working towards a transform, coherent, and development focus sector, whereby because we have huge impact in the sector as government, because if government had to not be involved in the sector, the private sector alone will not be able to sustain this. Therefore, the coordination in terms of policy and planning must be very coherent so that we can be able to achieve developmental outcomes. The private sector will not be looking at developmental outcomes, they will be looking at profit outcomes, and therefore there is a gap that we have to fill in this area. And nation building is a non-negotiable, that we need to be able to lead the nation and also be at the forefront of social economic transformation, but also a social cohesion that talks to the issues of the day, and therefore that would require to have that coherent and developmental focus approach. Because we can see the issues are also saying we need social cohesion, but where is the development, where is the transformation? And also, a productive, diverse, and inclusive sector to protect, preserve, and promote and develop arts, culture, and heritage. And advance the socio-economic inclusivity and contribution of the sector. And what has been critical is that when you look at the economic contribution of the sector, it is close to 2.9% of GDP. And that shows that it's significant. And which other sectors are comparable? Agriculture. So, therefore, we then need to be able to see how we can be able to increase that contribution. In order to be able to do that, we need to be able to have sound fiscal management in order to have sustainability. Therefore, we need to have governance and fiscal management policy, not only at the national department, but also with the 28 institutions that we are looking at. But also quite important is to be able to look at professional and capacitated sector, and then skills development and capacity, not only the officials, but also the practitioners in the sector, is critical for us to be able to maintain, to apply some fiscal management, but also be able to sustain the productive sector. So these goals are intertwined, and they would actually, when we look at our programs, we need to be able to be addressing these goals. So how would we choose programs? Then we could be saying, is this program addressing any of these strategic goals? Because if it is not, then we're not actually, from a priority perspective, then why should we have the program if it's not helping us with achieving these goals and also be in line with our mission and also the vision. So when we look, therefore, at what gives us the mandate to do what we do, the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, and we're going to be celebrating 20 years of it, of Constitution next year, is very fundamental. And that gives rise, therefore, to the legislative mandate. And also we have, in addition to the legislative mandate of the department, there are founding legislations, and in terms of finance, we're governed by the PFMA, and also the Division of Revenue Act, and then we have policy frameworks. And some of the work in the white paper is to be able to then address some of these legislative mandates to say, in order to be relevant and better, what are the things that we need to be then taking into account and prioritizing to be able to deliver our mission and our vision. And also when we look at the policy context, we factor in different plans, the new growth plan, the industrial policy action plan, medium-term strategy framework, the NDP, and so forth, the election manifesto, which then helps to focus our lens on making sure that we are able to talk to the people at the grassroots level. And also, the State of the Nation address of the President becomes critical foundation for our mandate. And the alignment with the National Development Plan has also led to the alignment with the MTSF. And this is critical because the MTSF informs our plans. It's not the other way around. And therefore, we align our plans to the MTSF. And we contribute to the different outcomes such as improved quality of basic education, decent employment, through inclusive economic growth. However, we are tasked to lead on Outcome 14, which looks at nation building and social cohesion. And there we have also a coordinating role with other departments. The intergovernment engagement become very critical. And then when we look at what are the achievements, we've been able to, through the different programs, create jobs. But the critical thing is not only to just create jobs opportunities, but to basically create sustainable jobs. So our strategies need to be looking at the sustainability. And we've also hosted, as Minister has explained, Social Cohesion Summit, first in 2012, but also a Report Back Summit in 2014, which is a great milestone towards making sure that we are actually able to understand and implement the resolutions of the people on the ground that have given inputs through the social conversations and through the invisos to make sure that we drive the agenda of nation building successfully. And also, we've been able to see the Zanzibar Golden Economy having escalating economic benefits and job creation within the sector. And this came as a result of the call from the President in 2010 that government must play a role in creating jobs and economic growth. However, we do have challenges, and we've dealt with these in previous engagements. And we're listening, and we're putting things in place to deal with the challenges of internal control, audit controls, the recurring deficiencies of prior years, the lack of periodic review of policy, IT controls, and so forth. And also the issue of that have been identified by the Auditor General of poor supply chain management, contract management, irregular expenditure, which has led to qualifications, and so forth. So I won't go through all those issues because we elaborated quite a bit on our interactions. But also, we need to be looking at overall challenges that we are facing as a department, such as outside the high unemployment rates, particularly among black youth, women, and people with disabilities, and how are we going to be responding to these issues as through our programs as a department. and limited access to information by the majority of the population, how are we then making sure that we're going to communicate and bring others, not only through the libraries, but also through campaigns that can be able to increase access to our institutions and make sure that we have that productive engagement? And how are we going to utilize technological change, as members have indicated as well, to say we need to be able to ride and use all the instruments that are available? And also the infrastructure challenge, not only within the department, but broadly in the country, and how do we deal with those infrastructure challenges? And then when we look at issues that are specific to the our sector, the gaps in the legislative and policy framework, and how shows that gap clearly. And therefore, that is why the white paper process becomes important, to be able to identify those gaps, but also plug them. How do we deal with the slow transformation of the sector? And that's why CISA becomes important, because it becomes a voice that enables us to make sure that we can engage and in a collective way have impact in driving transformation in the sector. And also, how do we grow audiences? And how do we actually increase? Because if you don't have audiences, you do not have consistent revenue streams for our entities. Therefore, we need to be looking broadly in integrated thinking to say, how do we increase audiences in such a way that you can be able to bring sustainability to our institutions? So those are some of the broad, but also departmental and sector-specific issues. Cultural diplomacy. We've been reactive to some approaches. Now, how do we then take a proactive approach in terms of cultural diplomacy? And how do we narrow our focus to make sure that we maximize the value of cultural diplomacy in our sector? And also, when you look at the issue of program development on the African continent, and that is why Africa Month becomes important. When we look at the season, focusing on Africa seasons becomes important. When we look at our obligations within the BRICS, then focusing within those obligations that can enable for the African culture to be able to effectively contribute to cultural diplomacy. So those are some of the broader issues. And then when you look at the organizational environment, we need to be able to look at all the achievements, but also the challenges. And some of the challenges is that we had duplication and overlap of mandate. That's why the white paper becomes important. And these are picked up through the sector engagements, so that we can be able to then look from a policy perspective, how do we plan some of these gaps. And so these are then some of the challenges that we are facing. So our response from a policy perspective is that, number one, we need to be able to have an enabling policy and legislative and regulatory environment where we are making sure that we have coherent policies that give direction and we can be able to plan towards transformation of the sector. And what's critical is that we need to be able to have lively, sustainable livelihoods and social cohesion. Two, we need to have an inclusive economic development. Inclusive growth is important because if you have growth, but that growth is not distributed evenly, it's going to create social unrest, as we have seen. We've had growth, but that growth has not yielded a dividend to everyone. And therefore, our programming needs to be able to look and say, how do we make sure that we have geographical spread in terms of our programs? And a point that the person has made earlier, to say, you can be able to help us making sure that we can be able to have equitable geographical spread and make sure that that fast tracks inclusive growth. Nation building and social cohesion programs is a big priority to make sure that we have programs that are implemented and promote on a sustainable basis social cohesion and nation building. And radical economic transformation, that's critical because we cannot do the same things and expect to have different results. So we need to be able to take a radical approach, but an approach that can also yield transformative outcomes. And then at the foundation, we also need to make sure that there's effective governance and implementation institutions. And that means that we need to have alignment in terms of structures, authorities, and systems, and with the goals, and make sure that our entities are able to be effective tools to implement the department's mandate. So that has our thinking and response in terms of policy priorities. And within these policy priorities, we also then expand in the document in terms of what we mean by needs and making sure that we are able to have that focus. So I'll probably go into into a lot of detail in the interest of time so that we can then be able to just go now into the core of the programs. Now, I'd like to talk about the strategic priority in terms of these are critical. And we have 11 of them. And we have presented these before. So I'll just summarize them. Outcome 14, coordination, becomes critical. And we've held a report-based summit. Now, the critical thing is the community conversations. And the different approach now we're taking in community conversations is a thematic approach. Rather than a sporadic and reactive, is to be able to say, these are the critical themes that are coming from the ground. So things like, right now we have Afrophobia, so how do we deal with Afrophobia? And be able to target those nodes that are affected by that. And linked to this, choose social cohesion advocates that would actually talk to the needs of the people. It's not good to just bring celebrities from Johannesburg. You need to be able to choose people where that are coming from the community, because those are the people that understand the needs of the community. And that is why we are relooking as well to see expanding our social cohesion advocates. Two, white paper finalization. We have started the processes and we are continuing with the engagement. We've currently at a high level covered 4 provinces. We would be going to all the 9 provinces, but also have thematic, for example, on institutions. We can have consultations just talking about institutions. So we'll have broader consultations, but also focused consultations. And what this does, and this was the problem with the draft paper, is that there was no extensive consultation. And if you don't have extensive consultation, then there is no ownership of the results that come from the process. And so we've heeded that call to make sure that we don't make that same mistake, and that we have extensive consultation, and then once it is done, we put it together into a paper and have further commentary period for people to say, okay, this is what you've asked from us, and this is what you put together in response to the issues that we've highlighted to you, and you give them an opportunity to comment on our response. And once that is done, then it will be ready to go to cabinet. And then you are able to go through the proper finalization of the white paper. So this is very critical process for us. That's the golden economy. That's very critical because we need to be able to say, what are the opportunities that can be given to sustain the sector? And when you are able to collect them into one portal, you can be able to then make sure that you have sustainable opportunities. Then you can be able to deal with tax issues. Then you can be able to deal with create the development of skills. And you can be able to also create platforms for touring ventures and a venture capital fund. So that's a priority for us. And then when you look at heritage promotion and preservation, and the minister mentioned extensively the hero's acre, the importance of the hero's acre, that frustrating that. But also looking at the liberation heritage route. You know, with the hero's acre, you would have one element in terms of all roads would be leading to the hero's acre, but you also need to have the liberation heritage route in where the people are staying. And that way, people can actually see in a tangible way what the liberation heritage story is. But also, from an economic perspective, how do we attract tourism in those areas? Because now as you're attracting tourism, you can be able to develop skills for the people in those areas. You can be able to develop tourism routes that you are able to package and sell. And then people can want to be able to now book in advance and attend, go to those particular liberation heritage route and actually follow that route. So that's a critical strategy that is actually in play right now. Then the schools program. Yesterday we had very critical engagement between the Deputy Minister, of arts and culture, and also the deputy minister of public education, whereby we were outlining how we are going to be integrating our program within the departments. And they welcomed that because it made it easy for the coordination to happen. So, within 30 days, we're going to be signing the MOU that will be setting the basis. But also important with that MOU, it is going to be saying, this is the structure that you use to communicate. And we can, when we can be able to now deal with the issues of flag distribution in schools. So we provide the flags, but the maintenance and the educational aspect of that is then clearly defined that it's educational, it's the Department of Basic Education that has to do that. But also we can then help teachers in terms of assisting with additional materials to be able to teach this flag in schools. How do you actually give responsibility to students to raise the flag, because we have flags of flags. So the simple thing is, the students will be assigned for the entire year to say, today, you're going to raise the flag, and you're going to bring it down, this is how you fold it, and that's how you then teach students about taking care of the flags. When you look at national symbols, the preamble is not only about reciting, it's being able to say, give the students an ability and ascend to stand up and talk, and practicalize what that the preamble means to me. And you could take one line from the preamble and radicalize it and give the students an opportunity. So that was very beneficial because we were able to fast track, rather than working in sizes, we're able to fast track interaction. And we can actually be able to see tangible results because there is political leadership and also then the administrative leadership needs to be there to make sure that things work towards one direction. As services, that's also quite critical in terms of community spreading the information. And therefore, as the dance design and development approach, we are looking at that to say how do we frustrate the libraries. But also there will be libraries that serve as dual purpose in terms of schools and communities. And how do we make sure that those are also frustrated? And the Department of Basic Education had brilliant ideas on how we identify. So rather than creating libraries where you could actually, if you place this in a node that can serve the school and the community, and you're able to attract more traffic, then it becomes quite relevant. You are able to make sure that you can now promote the culture of reading if you have campaigns and so forth. So that's the key imperative for us. And then cultural diplomacy, Africa Month, is critical to be able to have celebration in all different genres, in dialogues, in being able to now create a platform to talk about the issues, but also showcase success, but also the platforms to talk about problems in a very heartfelt and open way. And also be able to then have a focus on the Africa and the BRICS season is a critical priority. Language program. And we've got the Use of Official Languages Act on 2nd of May is the deadline, and that becomes an important aspect. And so for us, fixing PISA becomes critical because we would have the language, everyone needing to, the services are saying, how do we translate a language unit, how do we go about doing this? So therefore it becomes imperative for us to be able to say, how do we fix the critical elements that would allow the effective rollout of the Use of Languages Act, that it can actually be able to promote the diverse use of languages. And then also, looking at the provincial structures, how can we be able to make sure that they are operating optimally? And of course, the critical thing is being able to deal with that issue of pension because they would have that provincial reach. And then the public entity governance, that's critical because we, as entity area, we manage 80% of our budget in terms of the public entities. So the governance and policy manuals are being developed. This makes it easier because when you deal with a public entity, they have to deal with heritage assets. Instead of them going and dealing and creating a different manual, you have a repository in the national department that can be used. How do you develop a procurement policy? We have a standard template that can be used. So that policy database becomes critical, and that's a critical outcome within this that we have to deliver. National days becomes, how do we make sure that the national days are inclusive and also celebrated in a meaningful way by all sectors of our society? So linking national days with programs. Second example, when we had with the Department of Basic Education, they also had ideas and says, right now the problem is that National Days are not celebrated in schools. The themes are not actually engaged upon. So when we have a program, we can create a platform in advance saying, these are the themes. What are you going to be doing? We have quad competitions, so we can be able to say, in this theme, this, you can then look at songs that talk about the theme. And then we give a platform on a particular national day for those choirs to actually perform. So you are actually building confidence and so forth. And in that way, you can also utilize our entities to say, in the life of a student, at least once, they need to have gone to an arts and culture institution as part of their enrichment and development. And so creative use of National Day is very important, and we are now finding ways to work with other departments on how to actualize. Similarly with the Department of of Justice, we've been able to look at saying, how do we now actualize some of these principles, like when you talk about human rights day. We've been having very interesting conversations relating to human rights and given some of the challenges that we have. And the 11th strategic program that we is archives and record management. This is critical, and there are challenges in sector around archive, and therefore we are putting dedicated efforts to make sure that archiving and record management needs to be mainstream all activities. So it's a simple thing that we're doing. For example, all the flagship events are filmed, but all those footage, we need to archive it, because we already found them. And then, so in terms of knowing that this concert happened or this festival happened, and we can be able to take that footage and archive it properly. So those are like low-hanging fruits. But we also need to be looking at long-term. How do we make sure that records management is mainstream, not only in the sector, but because we custody enough records, all records, therefore talk to different departments on how we actually mainstream that. But also, with technology, it becomes important to digitize collections to be able to preserve this. And we see with the Rivonia trial interbelt that if we did not digitize that, you would be having the interbelts rotting. But then by being able to digitize them, you are able to preserve the entire Rivonia trial, and you can be able to have students, professionals engaging with the material. There could be moves made out of it. So it's important to be able to utilize technology and the latest technology to digitize connections. And therefore, what we've done in the document is that we've been able to say these are the priorities, and we've been able to also link the priorities to the national policy and strategic frameworks, and be able to come up with the indicators and also take the outcomes that are in MGSF and bring them into our APD, not the other way around. And then also link to say there must be a budget, because if you don't budget for something, then you're not going to have it done. So therefore we have to link everything together to make sure that it is possible to make sure that we can be able to deliver. So I would like then to take a pause at this moment and then go on a program by program, highlighting the critical elements, but also giving projects and programs that are being implemented in the different programs. Okay. So we'll start with program one.
Although we've just sort of finished the document, but we look towards that. Okay. If you could just highlight the cause for us.
Chairperson, Honourable Member, thank you for this opportunity. I will be focusing on Program 1, which, as the committee might know, that this is the support function, the management and the support function of the department. It consists of the ministry, which is the office of the minister, the office of the deputy minister, and then supports of. It includes the office of the director general as the accounting officer, the branch corporate services, and then the office of the Chief Financial Officer. Maybe one, without preempting a question from the committee, I know there might be a question of what is the status of the filling of some of these core positions, and what I can state at this stage is that we have managed to find a suitable Chief Financial Officer who will assume duty on the 1st of May. We're holding funds for that. Everything is in process.
Sorry, can you wait for a while? We don't have the committee as members.
Thank you, Acting Chair. As Ella was saying, we are glad to announce that we have found CFO, and then also the DG Corporate Services will assume duty on Monday the 20th, so we are making progress on that. That's just as a matter of interest. As I've said in my opening point, that the purpose of Program 1 is to provide leadership management support functions. The minister, the DM, as well as the DG, and then the department as a whole. The DG has touched on some of the strategic goals, goals 1, 2, 4, and 5 of those that Program 1 as a support service directly contributes towards. Without going into too much detail, just to highlight some of the key performance indicators that are linked to sectoral strategic objectives. From an intergovernmental relations point of view, the Technical Implementation Committee, which is the DG together with the heads of department at provincial level, we are, over the medium-term expenditure framework, intending to have four such forums conducted. And this, as I say, from an IGR point of view, to build a much closer relationship with provinces. Then there's also the minister and the MCs, which is similar. The TIC actually precedes the MINMEC, where the minister meets with the MCs. Then what we've also been starting to do as a committee, you're aware of when the DG touched on the process of the strategic plan and APP, at a sectoral level, we start engaging our stakeholders at entity level as well as provincial level and other stakeholders on the development of our strategic plan, and then from there came to our annual performance plan at a sectoral level, so that we will be continuing our APP to review and then get approved only in TEF, as well as a service delivery improvement plan for the department on a 2-year basis. Then, over the last couple of years, we've also attempted, or there has been a decision taken to integrate marketing and communications into one function. So what we are saying is that over the NTEF, we will come up with annual marketing and communication implementation plans in support of the strategy of the department, and then there will be quarterly reports as well every quarter. Then, in line with a cabinet decision whereby every political principal of a department needs to have a minimum of 10 ECBs or public participation programs per year, and we have set 20 as the target, which is the minimum, but I can assure the committee that the current political principles are far exceeding this in as far as public participation is concerned. So that requires 10 plus 10, which then makes it 20. Then in as far as I think the DG touched on the annual or the whole issue about sectoral policy coordination, we as a department will be starting a process while whereby we will be auditing, monitoring, evaluating, and coordinating policy development within the sector. And the target that we set ourselves there is that we will annually update the sectoral data or policy database. Then the DG also alluded to as one of the priorities is national days to make national days a lot more inclusive. There's been a decision taken that from the current financial year moving forward that national days will move from the heritage promotion and preservation branch to program one. Although the budget still remains with program four, which is heritage, but the management coordination of this program lies with program one. And then there will be the quarterly reports that will be produced as well. With regard to the impact results, which is an annual assessment tool that the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation has come up with, we do have a baseline. Our latest assessment has been significantly better than the previous one. But what we aim to achieve is to, by this financial year, by the end of this financial year, in respect of the 2014 impact assessment, to at least have an assessment of three, which is at least minimum or meeting the minimum requirements. And then moving forward, in terms of the assessing scale, 50% being a four, and then at the end of 2018, then to have a level 4, 100%. Then with regard to the strengthening of financial resource base and resourcing mechanisms for the art, culture and heritage sector, what we aim to do is to have an annual report on the implementation of a centralized funding model for the sector, which we've also been speaking about that for quite some while. But we are now developing, working on the development of this funding model for the sector. And that's basically how will funds be distributed moving forward. Then a target which has been set in as far as the financial management controls is concerned, this is a national target that at least 70% of our goods and services spend, our procurement spend, will go towards broad-based black economic empowerment, as well as a new target that we set is at least 10% procurement spend awarded towards black women-owned business. We also know that there are other groups as well, designated groups such as youth and people with disabilities. However, those targets have not nationally been determined as yet, and there is work that we will be doing together with other national departments on determining what those targets are. But for now, there is a national target of 10%, which we have been setting ourselves. Then another target is that we will be coming up with, we will in the current year determine the baseline on goods and services procurement spend on local content. That is, as we move forward, once, as I said, this year we will be determining the baseline, and then moving to 16, 17, 17 and 18 from that baseline, then we will determine a percentage improvement. With regard to the information communication and technology, our IT environment, there has up to now not been an integrated approach in sector, the department and our associated institutions regarding IT platforms and plans and the like. And what we also want to do at this stage is to come up with an approved integrated enterprise-wide ICT plan and then the schedule for implementation. With regard to HR, these are not new targets. We are placing emphasis on the implementation of an internship program which represents at least 5% of our staff complement. That's a program we are busy implementing by the end of the fourth year and have the program running. there's also in terms of skills development levies act requirement that we spend at least 1% of our compensation for an amount equal to 1% on training and development. We will also be looking at the new target that has been set whereby we spend, I think it's 3% of our compensation budget within the sector. So that will include, for instance, learnerships and other like policy schemes focusing externally. So, but for now, the 1%, we will be running with that. And then the following two targets have always been there, they're not new, and we need to come back to report to the portfolio committee on our performance over the last year. I can already say that we have overachieved on both of those, so it's a matter of us improving and maintaining, especially in as far as people with disabilities is concerned, is to improve. We're currently standing on 54% females at SMS and 2.45% people with disabilities, but these are minimum targets. So I think that just summarizes briefly some of the key targets. As I indicated earlier on, the focus of program one is mainly providing strategic leadership, and then there's also compliance and governance related issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much. For the input, we do have questions as the portfolio committee, but I think we'll let you give the presentation and at the end ask our questions. But we really appreciate the fact that you went there further mile for us as the portfolio committee, because we believe that if we don't have all the information, we can't do our work properly. Thank you. We can get the next.
Thank you, Chair. This presentation will be done by DBG Monica Newton to cover Program 2 and Program 3.
Sorry, I'm just looking for the presentation on the desktop. We'll take a slightly different format. I'm just going to go over the desk. These will follow a slightly different format from my colleagues, but I hope contain these two information as requested by the portfolio committee to ensure that we have a clear sense for yourselves as you do your oversight of exactly what kinds of projects and programs we'll be running. And I still seem to be struggling. So the first presentation is Program 2, Institutional Governance. Members of the committee have a copy of the presentation. Just as an overview, it encompasses social cohesion, international relations, and governance. And the strategic goals seek, obviously, to the major priorities of the department. Nation building through effective social cohesion program implementation, a transformed, coherent, and development-focused sector, a productive, diverse, and inclusive sector, and, of course, very critically sound governance, modernized systems and processes, and a sustainable sector. Because, as the acting DG pointed out, this is the portfolio that essentially manages the work of our institutions, to whom an enormous portion of our budget is allocated. So in terms of social cohesion, the key programs and projects for the coming year speak to very much community conversations. And Chairperson, there's a very thick report which has been tabled with you today, which essentially outlines the outcomes of 30 community conversations which are implemented in all 9 provinces. The community conversations are a critical mechanism for us to hear from community what's happening in their lives, for them to come up with solutions, and very critically for this information to be fed back into the outcome 14 delivery forums so that we are responsive to these issues. We had 30 in 2014-2015, and we intend to have 33 in the new financial year, especially building on the report back summit, as the Minister had pointed out, as a tool to keep the conversation going, to very much get people involved in our work. In terms of advocating for social cohesion, the list of social cohesion advocates has been provided, but it's really our views choosing prominent members of society from a diverse group of people, young people, older people, from a diverse range of sectors and expertise to really advocate for and promote nation building and social cohesion. So they become an instrument in some respects of a much larger program. And so we've been very focused on creating platforms for them to really begin to do this work. In the prior edge, we had 10 platforms were created, including obviously various engagements within the group itself to create a framework for the best possible implementation of their mandate, and of course, very critically, alignment with DHC budgets and programs. And in the new financial year of 2015-2016, a further 10 platforms will be created so that our social cohesion advocates have prominence, especially as has been pointed out at this particular moment in time where we really do need leadership around this issue. In terms of moral regeneration, obviously the moral regeneration movement was before the portfolio committee a couple of weeks ago. We have a long-term relationship with MRM to support programs in support of the regeneration of morals. In 2014-2015, support was provided to various programs, and in 2015-2016, we will continue this relationship with MRM with a focus on programs specifically aimed in Limpopo, the Northern Cape, and Western Cape. And this relationship is a long-term relationship, and obviously the institution is a partner of ours, but they also work with a whole range of other partners in society as well. The target groups portfolio reports into Program 2. The objective of this program is going to mainstream issues of young people, women, people with disabilities, old persons, and children, but also to create targeted programs where necessary. In 2014-2015, six targeted projects were initiated, and in 2015-2016, we're going to be developing on those programs, specifically looking at flagships. For example, the Field Band Foundation, which does wonderful work with young people, the My History Educational Tours in Youth Month to really get people engaged with heritage spaces, a school holiday program in December, focused in the Northwest. In addition, we'll be having a series of dialogues and workshops aimed at empowering women, ensuring the ongoing Gender Legends project, which identifies extraordinary women in the sector and their contribution, and very importantly, beginning to engage with the notion of creating special content opportunities for people with disabilities. In this case, the creation of a specific theatre production involving people with disabilities, which we tour. In terms of arts education programs, as the acting DG pointed out, we have a framework agreement with the Department of Basic Education, which is currently under review. And the critical element of this is about improving the role of arts and culture and heritage in schools. In 2014-2015, there were four collaborative projects that were implemented in partnership with the Department of Basic Education. And in 2015-2016, these programs will be continued and enhanced under a renewed framework. And it's a very wide-ranging and really encouraging discussion that we had with education just as recently as yesterday. This would include the massive South African schools core, I said, known by the acronym SASCI, curriculum enrichment programs on music and theatre in school, where, for example, penny whistles and scores are provided to teach children how to engage with music. And a new partnership with the Department of Water Affairs, the Bus and Nancy program, which will utilize the arts and culture to really as a teaching tool for young children, especially pertaining to water conservation, which is a really major policy issue at the moment. In terms of international relations, we do a lot of work in this area, which is process-oriented. There's ongoing discussions between ourselves and the international community on an ongoing basis. But the focus this year will be on cultural seasons and cultural weeks. The objective of the seasons program is to build ties with key international counterparts and to promote cultural diplomacy, which, as ADG pointed out, is a major priority. In 2014-2015, seasons with UK and China were initiated, and discussions were initiated with Russia about the hosting of a Russian season in 2015-2016. In 2015-2016, the UK and China seasons will continue and in fact will conclude in this financial year. The plans for hosting of a Russian season will be concluded, and we hope that a season in fact will be hosted this year. And we will be, in a very exciting way, hosting a cultural meet in Argentina, which stems from long-standing relations between the two countries about possible markets and creative industry collaborations. In terms of cultural relations, multilateral, regional, and bilateral, the objective of the program here is to foster cultural ties between South Africa and various countries around the world. To the end, we conclude cultural agreements, and of course, we are signatories to instruments such as the UNESCO Instrument on Cultural Diversity, the African Renaissance Charter, and a critical component about our work in this area is serving these obligations. Due to some very high-level highs in 2014-2015, of course, we ratified the Charter of African Cultural Renaissance. A regional arts education conference was held in partnership with NEPAD, and we've serviced our cultural agreement through a range of exchange programs that have happened throughout the year. In 2015-2016, the focus will continue to be on servicing these relationships, the possibility of concluding a cultural agreement with Ghana, and of course projects in support of NEPAD and the Charter on African Cultural Renaissance, and further Edwards cultural agreements will be concluded. Africa Month is very much a key project that involves more than one branch, and you'll see elements of reporting in both Programs 2 and Programs 3. But it's a major flagship initiative of the department that really speaks to a new orientation of relations that look to Africa, that celebrate Africa in South Africa, and that very much begins to recognize the role of the AU and, of course, Agenda 2063 in Africa development. In May 2015, the inaugural Africa Month platform will be hosted with projects happening across the country. So in the next 2 weeks, there's going to be a major focus on Africa through flagship events such as, and you'll forgive my pronunciation, Guananasiko, the African Pop Music Festival, the Africa Heritage Fund Seminar and Exhibition of African Basket Work, the African Women Literature Symposium, and many, many others. We're also working closely with our provincial counterparts and, in fact, are investing in provincial programs to make sure that Africa Month is live across the country. One of the flagship projects is, of course, the hosting of the Pan-African Cultural Congress, which is part of our obligations in response to this extraordinary opportunity to speak to cultural leaders from across the continent about issues impacting on culture. In terms of governance, again, a very process-oriented component, and Conrad has reported on some of the elements, where we recognize that it's to ensure governance and accountability with regards to DSC institutions. It's not necessarily project-oriented, but what we do is we make sure that there are functional councils. To this end, 6 councils will be appointed, at least 2 chairpersons' forums will be held, and obviously regular CFOs and CEOs' forums are held at both central and group-based levels. The consolidation of governance of the Windbrow and Market Data Foundation will be a major initiative this year as we begin to bring stability into what has been a very difficult context over the last year or so. Further, as Conrad had pointed out, we're going to be looking at a lot of cross-sectoral programs, for example, an ICT governance framework, a database of policies so that it can see the strength in the environment, and making sure that there's effective monitoring and evaluation of the work of our institutions. From the perspective of the white paper, as the acting DG had pointed out, obviously one of the key focus areas of the white paper is precisely the institutional landscape, and so there will be a lot of policy-related work in this area in the year under review as well. The portfolio committee is well aware of the department's infrastructure program, encompassing new projects such as the legacy projects, as well as the ongoing maintenance of all of our institutions and the libraries program. This program has proved to be quite challenging and problematic, and we've been before the Portfolio Committee a couple of times to talk about this. So one of the key initiatives that we'll be implementing this year is improving the internal management processes and capacity at the Department of Arts and Culture to really improve delivery on infrastructure. This will be based on the development of credible youth asset management plans, which essentially are done in terms of the IAMA Act, which pertains to the regulatory framework for immovable assets that's administered in government. And of course, management and oversight over all infrastructure programs, whether they are heritage programs or upgrading programs in the community arts space or the ongoing maintenance and development of our own institutions. So this is a very key area of work, but it's not necessarily project-oriented. And that, Chairperson, brings me to the end of the Program 2 overview presentation. And with your permission, I'll move into Program 3 presentation. Program 3, Arts, Culture, Promotion and Development, presentation on key projects. Essentially, the program encompasses 2 areas of work, the National Language Service and Cultural Development. The strategic goals in this regard obviously very much align to the departmental goals of transform coherent and development-focused segment, nation building through effective social cohesion program implementation in arts, culture, and language, a productive, diverse, and inclusive arts, culture, and heritage sector, and very critically, a professional and capacitated arts, culture, and heritage sector. Also, just to note, the branch includes the work of 9 public entities, including the performing arts institutions, 3 development agencies, the Business Arts South Africa, the National Arts Council, and the National Public Radio Foundation, and of course, the Pan South African Language Board. So some of the key projects in this regard is in recognizing that the Use of Official Languages Act and in fact the objectives towards a multilingual South Africa really does require professional capacity. The department for a number of years has run a bursary program in partnership with universities across the country to provide opportunities for the study in various languages by young people who are interested in becoming professional language practitioners. In 2014-2015, 522 students were provided with bursaries administered by universities across the country. And in 2015-2016, in the first year of a new 3-year cycle, 6 universities have been identified, including the University of the Northwest, the University of Limpopo, and others. And as has been the case since 2014-2015, the bursaries will support both postgraduate studies in sign language, and of course, studies in the official languages. We aim to support 320 bursaries. In essence, we tend to overachieve in this regard because when UNICEF comes to the fore with its distance level study, we tend to be able to provide more bursaries, but for the moment we've pegged it at 320. And we do believe that this is a fundamentally important way for us to capacitate the language sector to begin to deal with the demands that the Use of Official Languages Act will place on departments and, of course, the broader sector. We have ongoing language service programs which relate to the translation and editing, not just of documentation within the Department of Arts and Culture, but from other clients in the government community, and of course the critical role in developing terminologies in a range of different fields, including ICT, arts and culture, life orientation, and make sure that language is kept up to date and they don't fall into disuse because terminology is not keeping up to date. In terms of strengthening the regulation of language practitioners, we'll be finalizing the regulations for the National Language Practitioners Council and, of course, beginning to think about how we begin to implement the Act in a context that we're unlikely to be able to access the additional funds that we need to actually implement the full council. In terms of human language technologies, 2 major programs we'll be working with this year, the Automato Translation Software. This project develops a software system that facilitates machine translation as part of broad efforts to ensure that all official languages are utilized and in which case it facilitates the implementation of the Use of Official Language Act. In 2014-2015, we completed the development of the machine translation system for English and Tsonga. In 2015-2016, the project will expand, developing a translation web service and will begin to collect any Setswana aligned text data for the development of a machine translation system that speaks that particular language grouping and beginning to train translators on the use of the software. So this is very much our attempt to say that the language technology is a very powerful way to facilitate multilingualism, and this is one of the ways that we are making it more possible for the Use of Official Languages Act to be implemented. The second project is the Lwazi Multilingual Speech Technology, a very exciting project that aims to develop text-to-speech systems to make literature accessible to people who cannot access written materials because they are blind or have dyslexia. In 2014-2015, a whole lot of detailed work was done on the technical specifications, scientific publications, and laboratory tests. In 2015-2016, we'll in fact be deploying the systems for isiZulu, English and Afrikaans, specifically focused on membership of the South African National Library for the Blind in this particular phase. It's an exceptionally exciting project that we see will really have extraordinary potential to improve access to literature and, of course, any written word components. In terms of cultural development, some of the key projects, as the acting DG points out, one of the critical priorities is, of course, transforming the landscape. And we need to do this through local content development, community arts development, and market development. And some of our key projects in this regard are the Mzansi Golden Market, MGM, which is a project that creates an online portal for the sourcing of artistic goods and services to facilitate certainly government procurement, but also access to other markets for artists. In 2013-14 and 2014-15, the system architecture was developed and piloted, and in 2015-2016, we ended the project is fully operational, allowing artists to create online web profiles with links to audio and visual video files, with links to Twitter, Instagram, to really begin to create an environment where it's a go-to portal to find arts and culture goods and services across the country. In addition, we're going to be packaging a loyalty program into this broader portal design that will begin to recognize where audiences are, where regular clients are, and beginning to assign a degree of incentive to how people interact with our sector. It will help us to collect information, but it will also help us to collect to develop new audiences. In terms of cultural events, this is a very large program. The objective really here is to support events as catalytic cultural development, but also local economic development, market and audience development opportunities. In 2014-2015, 616 events were supported. These included a wide range of national and provincially oriented festivals, but also events that came through open calls were made available to members of the artistic community to put forward cultural events. In 2015-2016, we continue to support 22 national regional events and some other events as well. The open call has been the subject of a lot of discussion and reform. As the acting DG pointed out, we have recognized that having one annual call for MGE is not adequate. So the call is open into perpetuity with decisions made quarterly. And in fact, we're about to conclude the first quarter for 2015-2016 this month. Further, we've created a framework within which projects with a value of under 100,000 Rand will be considered on a two-weekly cycle to ensure that we can be a lot more responsive to the needs of the sector. And this orientation takes place across public arts, tour events, and cultural events. Further, in keeping with the notion of a radical socio-economic transformation, for the open call processes, we are actually putting in place transformation targets, which will see us aim towards providing grants to 70% Black South African beneficiaries, 50% women, 35% young people, and 5% of people with disabilities, to really begin to use the MGE open call as their tool for the radical economic transformation. During ventures locally, our aim is to support existing products moving domestically. So where theatre productions happen in a space and need to travel to other spaces or other festivals, this is very much an incentive instrument to ensure that we get maximum value for the production costs that have already been covered. In 2014-2015, we supported 31 open call local ventures. And in 2015-2016, we'll probably support a great many more than that, but I'll be able to give you more detail when we come back and report quarterly. But similar to cultural events, we'll be adopting the same principle. Proposals will be open all year round. We will make decisions quarterly, and proposals of under 100,000 Rand will be adjudicated within 2 weeks, with four requests below 100,000. In terms of public art, this is really a program that takes art into public spaces and doesn't just require the audience or community to come to us in our designated spaces. It also aims to beautify public spaces through the creation of sculptures or installations that really enhance public spaces. In 2014-2015, we did 64 public art projects, 9 of which were identified in collaboration with our provincial counterparts, and those projects are ongoing. In 2015-2016, we will continue to work with those 9 provincial projects and specifically begin to animate spaces around the country to further open calls and support for initiatives like Inviting the City, which is a very successful festival. And of course, the iconic Africa Burn Festival as well, which again really takes art into new spaces and creates new audiences for work. In terms of the Art Bank, the aim here is to create a collection of works by South African visual artists, thereby creating new opportunities for revenue for artists, but also to create a mechanism for the renting of these works by governments and other interested parties. So what this will mean is that this core collection is then rented out for a revenue that will then continually refresh the acquisition budget of the art bank. In 2014-2015, we conducted a very detailed study as to the optimal operational model, the appropriate policies that are put into place, and those specifically beginning to guide acquisition of artworks, which will be the fundamental role of the art bank. Further, we decided on the National Museum in Bloemfontein as the host institution, at least for the next 3 years, because it has a lot of expertise and capacity within itself, and certainly the hosting of the institution here, close to a an institution with a visual arts mandate, would essentially mean that we're able to piggyback on existing human resource financial management frameworks so that we don't necessarily take on enormous institutional costs in this first piloting phase. In 2015-2016, we will open a national call. We will be procuring artworks, and there will be the hosting of a national exhibition and marking the services of the art bank to government and other clients. The Community Arts Development Program and artists in schools continue to be a very important focus of our work, both in terms of local market development, but also ensuring that the arts community is as inclusive as possible. Here we aim to ensure that there is community arts programming across the country, to refurbish existing community art centers, and where necessary, develop new centers with a focus on rural and township areas. In 2014-2015, we rolled out community arts programs through identified community arts networks in all 9 provinces, and the process of consultation on a specific policy agenda for community arts was initiated, and further 240 artists were placed in schools. The reason that these two have been encapsulated together is because we work very closely with the community arts sector in identification and management of the artists in schools, in collaboration also with our provincial departments of arts and culture and departments of basic education. In 2015-2016, 300 artists will be placed in schools, so the list will be growing, Jefferson, so you'll be seeing a new list too. We'll be aiming to refurbish 5 centres based on an audit that we conducted in the previous financial year, and we will initiate 100 community arts programmes, because as DG had pointed out, it's critical that budgets follow priorities, and in this case we've made a substantial investment in community arts over the MTF in line with the medium-term strategic framework. One of the key elements of the medium-term strategic framework is the development of new audiovisual products that celebrate African civilizations, but also celebrate the lives of liberation struggle heroes. In support of this work, we've created a local content fund for the first time in 2015-2016, and we will be supporting films and documentaries in line with the MTSF targets. This is a very exciting new area of work that we will be undertaking for the first time. In terms of collective partnerships, as the Minister had pointed out, the creation of the Cultural and Creative Industries Federation is probably one of the most important things that happened in the arts and culture sector for a very long time. And as Minister pointed out, we have a 3-year agreement which sits us to a sector partnership arrangement that will support their work. So we are putting up significant resources to ensure that the work of SISA can continue and that the membership base can expand and that this really can become the force for change in the sector that we all believe it can be. Further, we'll be working with the Association of Independent Record Companies on programs to assist musicians to create music videos, which are incredibly powerful marketing tools for musicians, with the Designing Dabba on the incredibly successful Emerging Creators program, and we'll continue that work. With Moshito, the annual music conference, live music expo, and music showcase. The South African Roadie Association, in supporting the international program, which provides essential work experience to the South African Roadies Association trainees. In terms of programs for promoting and supporting the culture of reading and writing, we will continue to support National Book Week, which is really a national advocacy program for South African literature and for reading and recognizing how important it is that we become an educated and engaged, knowledgeable society. Further, we support the South African Literary Awards, which recognizes the work of both established and new authors across the country, and we'll continue to support participation in a series of book fairs and conferences such as the Cape Town Book Fair. In terms of international market development, We will continue to support term ventures which travel internationally. In 2014-2015, 10 open call projects were supported, and we will probably enhance that significantly in the new financial year as word about the joint venture has got out in the sector. There's a lot of interest in this area of work. Further, similar to cultural events and public art, we will be administering the program in a lot more flexible manner to really ensure that when an artist receives an invitation to a festival, we can really facilitate participation and therefore unlock new benefits. In 2015-2016, the South African Pavilion at 36 Venice with Biennale will be opened in May 2015 and closed in November 2015, and requests for proposals for the 2016 Architectural Biennale will be made. The Biennale is an incredibly important opportunity internationally to showcase local work, and I'm sure the Portfolio Committee will be aware of some of the challenges that we face in the mounting of this 36 Venice Biennale, but there are also ongoing discussions between ourselves and Treasury to find a better mechanism of ensuring that we are able to plan and implement well in advance. Further to international market development, obviously our program works very closely with Program 2 on the implementation of seasons and cultural weeks, because from our perspective, it is very critical that we create economic ties, in other words, market opportunities for artists in through the cultural seasons and the cultural weeks. So in this instance, China season, breaks the Russian season, the cultural week in Argentina provide very powerful opportunities for us to work together with our international relations counterparts and ensure that the Oxford culture sector benefits. We also keep participants in Africa Month, where again a huge amount of focus is on creating new market opportunities for African artists in South Africa, but also for South African artists abroad. And we are very actively engaged in partnerships on Africa Month. In terms of capacity building, as was pointed out by the acting DJ and the NTSF outline, is that NACIFA remains a very important objective, but there's been a very critical shift in this regard. The prior focus was primarily on a bricks and mortar institution, and the focus is now much more on creating a framework to support centers of excellence and the content of training and development that really supports a capacitated and professionalized sector, which is not to say that there wouldn't perhaps be a formal institution at some point, but for the moment, we're very much looking at it as a supporting system for good quality training. In 2014-2015, the concept was revised in line with new priorities, and in 2015-2016, against that concept, training programs aligned to NACIFA will be initiated. Critical in this regard, and it's a major component of the NACIFA concept, is the incubator program. This is a very exciting and innovative area, new area of work, which aims to support the professional development of young artists, that radical socio-economic transformation theme coming to the fore, and also the development of new local content. In 2014-2015, we developed a concept and a call for proposals was made amongst DAC performing arts institutions, and we started to pilot some of these incubation notions, for example, with the South African Bureau of Standards and Design Inspector. In 2015-2016, 8 incubator programs will be piloted with our performing arts institutions, but also, for example, the Katowice Music Academy, where it was recently launched in Mpumalanga, because we really see that this is a major new area of work. Linked to the incubators, a venture capital fund has been refreshed that will essentially provide seed capital to really good products and ideas that emerge from these incubators. So it's not just a notion that you will be in the incubator and then you will exit and you seek to finish. There will actually be catalytic funding that will enable you to take that opportunity to the next level. Further, the scoping of masterclasses, which are targeted training opportunities as part of the incubator model, will really ensure that we're able to spread the skills within the incubator community, but also wider than that. In terms of access to information, very critically in the establishment of a cultural observatory. As the Minister and the Acting DG mentioned, we recently completed in 2014 a seminal mapping study which essentially created a statistical baseline for us to understand the economic contribution of the cultural sector in South Africa. The observatory will continue to collect and distribute information in a systematic and sustainable way. In this respect, a three-year tender was awarded to Nelson Mandela Bay University for the hosting of the observatory over a three-year period. And as I mentioned, a benchmark national study was completed. The Observatory will continue this work in alignment with a 5-year research agenda. We'll initiate discussions, conversations, workshops, and conferences about the information to ensure that it's widely disseminated and that it really does begin to influence not only how we do our work, but how we talk about ourselves. And further, the Observatory will begin to take over monitoring and evaluation of key HDE work streams and projects to ensure that we continue to have that ongoing information about the impact that NGE is having on the cultural sector. And that, Chairperson, is the final word for Program 3. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Looking at the presentation, I think as the portfolio committee, what we were requesting is that you give us information that is going to assist us to monitor you. Because the APP definitely falls short of that. The APP just give you this figure. But as the portfolio committee, what we were requesting was that tell us if you are saying there's going to be this aid program of intubation, whatever. In quarter one, this is what is going to happen. And this is where it's going to happen. And this is how it's going to happen. So that we are in a position to say, at the end of quarter one, department, you said we're going to do this in quarter one. Did you do it? If not, what was the problem? Where can we assist you? You know? And I think we don't have, I personally, I am not happy that, you know, that the information that you are giving us is taking us to this space where we are confident that when we sit in the next meeting at the end of the quarter, we'll say, you said you are going to do this, and how far have you gone? So I think it's important, even if, for instance, there was something here that shows that it's going to be implemented, we are going to be able to see it at the end of this financial year. And there is nothing, quarter one, quarter two, quarter three, but there's this thing that's at the end. If you are saying we're going to achieve this at the end, during the fourth quarter, in quarter one, quarter two, quarter three, what is it that's going to happen to lead you to the implementation of whatever in quarter four? Because as the portfolio committee, we need information that is going to assist us to monitor you. Because if you don't give us that information, we will wake up at the fourth quarter and we'll say, but you said you're going to, and you say, oh, we couldn't do it. And why? And we could identify areas where we could assist as the portfolio committee. So I think this is the information that we were requiring. But I don't get from the presentations, I don't get the sense. I don't know if you feel that the information that you are giving us is taking us to this space where we are confidently going to monitor you. Because this is what we want to do. To quarter by quarter, to hold you accountable, to say, this is what you said you're going to do. You said you're going to, your target is 8, but what are you going to do during quarter one to take you to your target? You know? So I think this is the information that we need as the portfolio committee. We are aware that the departments always say that this is treasury, that this template is from treasury, and we respect that. But as the portfolio committee, we need information that's going to assist us. This template is not assisting as much as the portfolio committee. So I'm hoping that what we are asking for is clear, and is clearer, and we will get that information. We know that we have a lot of work to do, but naturally we need to play our part to monitor you, to ensure that you as in each quarter you achieve what you expect for yourself. Because if you just have this figure, we can't monitor you. We need to break it down to the tiniest detail so that we are able to monitor you. I hope that is clear. But also, we did meet with the Auditor General Office, and they gave us a report of the sampling that they did. Because when we asked them, did you actually go through the whole thing, they said, no, we just sampled. So we want to hear from the department, because what the AG is saying is that
they sampled, they gave you their findings, you tried to rectify some of the mistakes that they had identified, and we said, what about those programs that they didn't do? Because they did program, only two programs, and they said they raised the issue with you that we've done this program and this is what we have found. So go to other programs to ensure that, because it's important that you have something that is measurable, something that we can measure. Otherwise, we will not be able to do our work. We want to hear from the department if you did look at other departments that were not, that the AG didn't take in. And also on the issue of, for instance, we do need this, we need you to be specific. I don't know how to, how more can I explain this? Because if you are talking about the finalization of the white paper, for example, you say, these are the things that have to be done. And we need to finalize it, maybe by the end of this financial year. What is it that you'll be doing? What is it that you have done in this year, first quarter? Where are you focusing? Are you going to spread to those provinces that were not mentioned in the earlier document? So that you are able to say, you said you're going to finalize the consultation with provinces. So in this quarter, you are going to feed back to those people to say, is this what you, the decisions that you take, you took, and just like that. We need that information so that we are able to monitor you. There are issues here, for instance. I don't know whether the issue, the figures in the budget book tally with your figures that are in the in your AP. Have you looked at that and the tally? Okay. So what is in the budget book is what is in your book. What's in the budget book is what is in your APP. So you looked at that. So when I talk from the budget book, I'm talking from your APP. Because the figures that are here should be the figures that you work with. So have you looked at that? I will need a response for later. You can confirm. And one other thing that I think is important for the portfolio committee. Have you looked at the APPs of the entities and ensured that the APPs of the entities talk to what you want to achieve, what you want to achieve as a department, what government as a whole wants to achieve? Have you specifically looked at them? And can you here and now say that, because the next step will be meeting the entities. Looking at the figures right here, maybe we would need an explanation of the issue. In fact, Monica, the issue of your bed service. From the budget book, it shows that it has declined. But in your presentation, it's showing that you have increased the intake, because that's the one question that I was going to have. To say, if you are looking at education as a priority, you cannot decrease the budget of the BESA. But you respond to that. And looking at the situation that we are having, the number of your community conversations, according to the budget book, are dropping from 45 to 35. In 2014-15, you had 45. In 2015-16, you are saying you are going to have 33, according to the budget book. And the job opportunities, according to the budget book, they are dropping from 28,200 in 2014-15, to 20,990 in 2016. So this is why I was asking that, are these figures, if these figures are the figures that you have, then you need to explain why the job. And you understand that there are austerity measures. But what is surprising is that your travel and subsistence is growing. While these programs, they are cut in these programs. That's what we think are very important. So I think you need to look into that as well. And the issue that was raised by the previous portfolio committee, that the department is funding institutions, the upper state institutions, the institutions that are being funded by the upper state, the research that we're paying in, it's like the department just got into a bus, they took the driver that was there at the time, they came in and they just drove the bus, not looking at the manner in which the institutions are being funded. So I think you need to speak to that, because looking at the budget book, you are still funding the same institutions that were funded by the upper state system. You are just, and it was raised by the previous portfolio committee. We raised it when we first came in, and it's still like that, looking at the budget book. So I think it's important for you to tell us, have you considered this? Have you never considered it? What is the plan of the department? And also, I think the issue of the community art centers. Because if you are saying one community center or library, and you say you're going to build only one, if you could tell the committee, you did a study, whereabouts are these art centers that are in existence? What is their status? And if you are saying you're going to build one per village, how many centers are you talking about? And how are you going to get there? I think it's important, looking at also the budgetary constraints that the department has. Honorable members, I am giving you an opportunity to ask questions and to make a comment. And one other issue that I think is a pending issue for us as the portfolio committee is the issue of archives. I think it's a very important issue. And if you look at provinces, government is going to be litigated. People are going to take government to the court because of archives. And I think it's important for you to assist, to discuss, to consult with the provinces, to ensure that you assist in whatever way that you can. Honorable members? Okay, maybe let me give an opportunity to just perform on the issues that I have raised, and then I'll give the honorable members an opportunity.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, would you prefer that we finish all, because some of the questions you asked could be answered in the presentation on program 4, and then we can be able to then take it from there.
Yeah, if program 4 is going to be in a position to present in the manner that we have asked at the postulator committee. If no, it just may be to respond, if program 4 to respond to the issues that have been raised, looking as much as present. Because I think going through the presentation, if it's not going to assist us, it's not going to help.
So perhaps I can start answering some of the questions and then relate to a particular issue and then refer to program 4. But I think it would be quite important to maybe explain why the budget book would not 100% reconcile with the ATT. Now, when you look at the process to get to the numbers that are considered in the ENE, it would be looking at even estimates, because the budget has to be tabled in February. So therefore, the numbers have to be given to December, and then you have to also then be able to look at the estimates. And that is why, then, to allow the reconciliation, you have a column called adjusted appropriation to take into account the reality that would happen in the fourth quarter. So now, when we prepare the strategy plan and also the ADP, we do take into account some of the budget principles that have to be applied. So, for example, in the October midterm budget, but also in the February budget, there will then be certain adjustments. So, for example, like a rule on saying that on vacancies, if you do not fill them up within a particular period, that rule was not applicable if you prepared the initial E&E, and therefore you then have to then readjust and say, okay, are you going to have to decrease consultants to be able then to increase your compensation budget? And for you to be able to do that, you also have to go through environmental processes. So therefore, you will never be able to have complete alignment. So for example, if we said we were going to look at 45 community art centers or 45 community conversations, but then when you actually then relook, there's a budget freezing. And therefore, you then have to say, but given this budget, I'm not increasing that, I cannot cover 45, I can only cover 33. But also you have to take into account the MTSF target to say, how will I also then be able to hit 150 targets? So you readjust it to be in line with the budget, but also with the MTSF. And that is why you don't have complete alignment. And also there would be processes of environment. So for example, we consolidated and we took a decision in February to say we will consolidate all the infrastructure budget into program 2. And that has implications because you then have to move personnel, then you have to be able to adjust some of the ADP targets, and it would have budgetary implications because also they have to factor in that within the infrastructure you do need to have capacity in terms of you can use IDT or you can procure from external party. And there are those considerations that you have to apply your mind to be able to then finalize your APT. And that is why then there's an opportunity midway to be able, you will see that there was an appropriation amount and an adjusted amount. So we can be able to reconcile to say why we're moving from this amount and to that amount. And also coming from the budget, midterm budgets, they tell you with these entities, we did not provide the rollovers, and this is the impact. And we are decreasing a budget from this program and to that program. So we then have to factor that in. And that is why it is called estimated. So it is not final audited. However, if we do have a difference between the final audited amount and what we report, then there would be a problem. But because we're working with estimated, so there is a room to be able to get those adjustments. So that's, I think, important to be able to then to flow through. When we also look at the targets, we then have to then relook at the target to say, do we have the budget? If you don't have a budget and you've got a target, then you're also setting up yourself, you're not being realistic. So we have to be realistic, and when we then readjust the target, because it will be driven by budget and by the principles that are set out by National Treasury. So, and then in terms of, I think, Chair, it might be useful for having clarity in terms of the information you would require. So what we would do, we will then work an example to say, is this, are we happy with this example? And then we then agree and sign off to say, this is the kind of information. Then it will, reduce the back and forth. So then if you say, okay, in addition to what is regulated, this would be what is supplementary and helpful to the portfolio committee and wanted in this format, then we can be able to then agree on that. And then it makes it easy to tell the officials, please, this is the rule. You need to be able to fill it in this format. And that way we can then be able to have that seamless engagement. And then in terms of the APPs of the entities and the reconciliation to our APP, it is not 100% aligned. And the reason is, when we look at, we would look at much more broader issues. So for example, when we say we're going to have a policy database that would look at specific for broadly within the department, the ADP of an entity would have to also be able to break it down to say, these are the policies that they would be prepared. So they have to look at what is specific in the sector, which might not be affecting us, but which, what is specific, could contribute to the overall goal. So therefore, we have looked, that's why we have the sector engagements with them, to say, at least on an overall basis, they need to be within the same frame. But when you look at the implementation part, they would have different targets that may not necessarily be aligned to us. So because they would have to, the National Arts Council would have to look at what are the grants, and they would have very unique two market theatre ATP targets. And that's why then, to help harmonize what we then say, to make sure that your targets and your goals and your targets that you set are smart, these give them a menu of targets to use for, to choose from, that they can be able to customize for their particular sector. So it would be different to have that complete alignment, because we want to be able to say, this is your area with the museum, and this is what you need to be able to do. And then we have a link in terms of overall monitoring and support that might be common, but they would have to be looking at their specific areas and make sure that they are able to make an impact on that. And then so that also allows the portfolio committee to be able to look at those specific areas, and therefore there is that level of accountability that takes place. And then in terms of the Auditor General, it becomes an important element, because the Auditor General cannot also be consulting, because it would affect their independence. And hence, in the process, when we work with the indicators, they take a high-level look and then choose indicators. And then they would highlight, saying, this is not a smart indicator, because, for example, a simple thing, when you have flags, how do you prove? Because we were saying, okay, when you would have distributed it. And then we then said, okay, the simplest thing to actually do, look at your delivery orders, and somebody signs and then actually does it, because now you are able to have something that you can be able to verify when you're distributing the handoff flags. Whereas previously it was very vague, but now we made it much more tighter. And also the various issues on saying you're going to be coming up with 10 policies, but you're not being specific to say, is it one program per province? We say 10 programs across South Africa, but you need to be more specific to say it's one program at least in each province, and then you can be able to measure, to say, in this province you did it, but in those others you did it. And it also avoids then, if it's vague, to say, we're going to do 10, and you concentrate on the regular provinces. So those are some of the things that came from the engagement. Then as a principle, they said, okay, we will apply these principles to all the different targets. So like community conversation, how do you prove that they take place? Yes, you can have also the attendance register, but it's also important to be able to have a quarterly report that summarizes these are the things that came up, and then that has an input into that report that you'll be able to see. And this starts building up for the social conflict which we need to be able to deliver in 2018/19. So we've been able to then to refine some of the evidence that we collect to be able to then make it easy to show the progress towards that. And so this just has to paint the broader picture. Perhaps then we can look at the specific questions on archives to be then able to deal with that.
Thank you very much, honorable members, Minister. The question that was a comment from the chairman, that we need to pay a lot of attention to the archives, and maybe the response to that, chairman, is that yes, we are aware of the problems, and we did come here to discuss some of the challenges that we have in the archives. And yes, subsequently that there has also been very bad press around the archives. But just to say that we are working on the feasibility study for the conditional value, because most of the problems that are there actually emanate from lack of financial resources. And we're certain about that, because even within the library sector,
there were similar problems until such time that the one study intervention from National Treasury. There was a study that was done which clearly identified the problem areas and also came with specific recommendations in terms of where interventions are needed. And it compared those interventions. And then we then went to Treasury to ask, going there with a very scientific document that was clearly indicating the problem, potential solutions, resources required. So that's what we do in country Treasury to deal with the challenges that are there in the Akamba sector. Thank you.
On the committee at centers, we looked at the strategy of saying it doesn't make sense. There's a lot of infrastructure that is available, like halls, schools, and yesterday with engagement with the Department of Basic Education, they said, you know, sometimes they close down schools. And what happens to those schools? How can they be actually revitalized? So, and the strategy that we're looking at is saying, look, before you start building, look at the low-hanging fruits. And having an audit of what are those low-hanging fruits become quite important. And therefore, engagement with the Department of Public Works, who is in charge of most of the infrastructure, is a critical element. And we have put this on the agenda with them. We have engagements with the Department of Public Works. And part of it is to say, they would say, we have this infrastructure. How do we beautify this space so that we can attract more people to actually rent it out and so forth? Then we look at those opportunities. And look at the opportunities of the schools, look at the opportunities of taking community halls, and so forth. And perhaps Monica could enhance that, and maybe with also the issue of the line of pursuits.
As you tell us what you're going to do, you need to be specific. To say, in the first quarter, this is what we'll be doing. So that, as I said earlier, we are able to follow up, we are able to monitor. We are able to evaluate. If you're going to talk with public works, when are you going to do that? Is it first quarter? Is it basic education? And as you said, that you're going to sign a memorandum of understanding. What is it saying? What is it that's going to be done? So that we are all clear on what you are planning. So that, because our job is to monitor and to make you account. Okay, Monica.
Thank you. With regard to community hall changes, as the acting DJ pointed out, is that I think that there is a recognition that there is a lot of infrastructure that could really be refurbished or repurposed into community arts. But we did an audit, a very comprehensive audit in 2013-2014 that began to indicate where both government-held and non-profit-held community art centers were. A very detailed document that we can provide you that not only speaks about the facilities but also about the functioning. So one of our key partners in the community arts program is 9 provincial community arts seeking networks, organizations and people who consistently work in this field, and we're working together with them in collaboration obviously with provincial departments and local government who technically own the facilities to determine the refurbishment project. So at the moment that consultation process is underway through discussions with the community arts networks. And so the audit has given us the information of what's functioning and what's not. The community arts consultation process is helping us to identify where to start. And I think that one of the critical elements to recognize is that the community arts program is not just about infrastructure, but it's also about programming. And the NTSF target is in fact phrased in quite a nuanced way to deal both the infrastructure investment, but also about programming investment. And so similarly, to deliver those 100 programs and eventually to begin to strive towards that ideal of community arts in every ward, we'll be continuing to work with these networks and make sure that that programming becomes a reality because of the audit that was done, because we now know where their functional systems very much started to use, and Chip was being asked us how. The critical thing is to invest in the functional so that they can spread their work and help the dysfunctional. So it's almost a hub and node strategy. We will invest in key, strong centers of excellence in the community arts domain to then assist and support dysfunctional structures or new structures in other areas. And our network of community arts practitioners and centers is very central to helping us do that work. So I hope that addresses the question to some degree now. In terms of the bursaries, we've set a target of 320, but because of the nature of the systems that's provided, it varies per student and per institution. So an institution such as UNISA can deliver on a lot more bursaries for the same amount of money as a full-time study institution. And so, in essence, it may seem as though there's a drop, but as I indicated in 2014-2015, instead of the 320 bursaries that we had targeted, we've in fact done a substantial number more. So it's a complex environment in which we try and manage an almost an operational reality of the budget, but also try and be realistic about the budget expectations, because some universities, given the financial need of the students who present themselves, may in fact do fewer bursaries than other universities. So it's not so much a reduction in actual figures, it's just our attempt to create a consistent target that we can aim for. But in terms of reporting, you can see that we generally achieve more than that, but that we can't guarantee given the need base of the student populace that we're servicing. So it is always a challenge. And that's one that we could work with on the portfolio committee on getting a better target in future as we go forward into the next planning cycle. With regard to the job creation, essentially, as was pointed out in the activities presentation, we've not achieved our job creation targets in the NG frame. And that's mainly, in our view, due to economic downturn issues. So we've actually rethought that target and brought it into line with what we know is a very difficult time in the arts community. So we are aware that jobs are still being created, but at the moment, those jobs are definitely constrained by the economic context, and that's why we revised that figure down, just because our current results are indicating to us that we can't continue to have a high job creation target. The operational reality is different, and so we're adjusting that accordingly. We're also getting better and better baseline information every year about what the average job creation level is in particular kinds of festivals and events, and that's starting to allow us over time to actually target better as well. But it is a challenge now, and we do struggle with it on a daily basis. And I think that those were the two specific questions. About the community conversations, I'm hoping that the portfolio committee will allow me to respond to that question in writing once I've had a chance to engage with colleagues, because I'm honestly not sure why there's such a gap. It might be because of the inclusion of Imbido and in targets in community conversations. I'm not sure in this current APT it's actually been separated, but I will communicate that with the portfolio committee in due course. My apologies for not having that information on hand.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, it's your time for questions and comments. But on the issue of jobs, I think arts and culture is a artists are job creators more than job seekers. Crafters are more job creators more than job seekers. So they create the job. So I think the department should look into that. That they're not dealing here with job seekers, they are dealing with job creators. And how do we assist these people who create jobs? Yeah. Because they are creating jobs, they are not looking for jobs, they are doing what they are doing. If you are a crafter, you are doing. You are creating a job for yourself and with other people. So how can we as the department look at this job creators rather than looking at people as job seekers? How can we enhance their ability to create, you know? So I think it's important for us to look at it like that. And I think what the minister was talking about is, of how do you regularize the issue of payment of artists? Because if you go to Eastern Cape, and you will find people paying an artist $2,000, and this is what is happening within departments of arts and culture, including the Ghana department, they'd rather pay for catering. They'd rather pay more for catering than paying the artist more. Give artists 5,000 and pay 100,000 for catering. So I think we need to look into the artists.
just repentance of creation of self. And take what the presentation that we had. Number one, because of course I don't know how to structure it. In terms of the department on the empowerment of local economy, I did see the presentation is more on the system than the department collect the data, report, whatever. But how is the implementation and how is the department to program to create, to empower the local economy and to deliver this program to especially the locals, how are we going to do that? Which is our locals, to talk about our artists and the colors, what the chair has just said. There's a system that, well, what is presented, the system is there, the legislation is there, and the implementation, how I'm going to do that, show us. And number two, the issue is that 80% of your budget goes to transfer of your entities. How will the department ensure that these entities will spend this money on people, knowing the challenges that the entities are having? Share some of them, you know, that they pay plus minus 10 PM on the legal fees. So, how do you monitor this and how so will it empower the BBBE? On finding modeling, I have this question because in terms of the presentation. On the finding model, as a woman, okay, I welcome the 8%, but it doesn't justify on the issue of youth and people with disability. This one, I think, as the portfolio committee, we need to stress it. We are in 20 years of democracy. It can be to say that people with disability and the youth are being put aside. When we check, most of young people are not getting. As we speak, what's happening in Devon, most of the act is young people that are involved in this because there's nothing to do. And if this 30% goes only to women, what about that person in the wheelchair, in the corner, who wanted to get something from the department? Are you saying that you're going for her? And does the department doesn't have a strategy in the inclusion of youth and people with disability? I think this is a matter of as the fellow committee, because these are the people that we interact with and they. And the issue of the Equity Act. 20 years in democracy, the act is there a long time ago. Doesn't mean that the department doesn't know how to implement it. So we need a direction on that. On the development of the asset management and the issue of governance, also. We are having an audit committee in the department. So what is the role of the audit committee? Because already the issue of asset management is the asset register supposed to be tabled, whether it's for Charlie or Monday, in audit committee. Why every time are you coming with me that you wanted to do this, you wanted to do this? Whereas the committee say, what is the role? Because this thing we're supposed to care to get, or the department needs to have a data, or they need to have information from the asset management committee on that. And yeah, I will come back to lot of papers here. No, thank you.
Thank you, another member. Another my colleague, do you have your hand up?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would say it is difficult for me to believe that a department has so many problems ranging from the very adverse finding by the Auditor General to the solid state of affairs of agencies under this department can come here and give us such an abstract presentation of its strategic plan. And number two, the presentation is very generic, says very little about what particular measures will be taken to lift up the department from familiarity. It is in right now. No specific intervention by the department. All the troubled agencies like PEMSAP and others is mentioned. And also, no specific intervention to improve the local contents of our feelings and videos. Industry, thereby looking up our own capacity to narrate our own stories the best way we know. That's the person that I will.
Honorable Makonde and Honorable Lakut.
Thank you, Chair.
We welcome the presentation, Chair. Even though it is very conservative in terms of details, and I think it's going to make very difficult for us as a portfolio committee to do oversight over this government. But however, Chair, in the previous audit outcome, there were issues raised by the Auditor General. I want an explanation as to how the department and what mechanism the department has put in place in order to address those issues, issues like your asset management, effective internal audit controls, supply chain issues, your quality of financial statement, and a prevention and follow-up of irregular and fraudulent and wasteful expenditure. What mechanisms are in place in order to deal with that? The other issue which was raised relates to the root causes of the version issues which the Auditor General raised, which is as a result of lack of consequences for poor performance and transparency by the official of this department. And the other issue relates to the vacancies that are there in the department, particularly on key positions. And the other issue which the Auditor General raised relates to lack of capacity or appropriate competencies within the key officials of the department. The other issue which was raised on the presentation relates to the issue of achieving 50% in SMS. I wanted to understand whether the presentation which was made in relation to the filling of the two positions, the corporate and the chief financial office, take that into consideration. Those are the issues that I wanted to raise.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Honorable Pelangu.
Thank you, Chairperson. Quite long that you fail to engage some of the issues on the way. But let me start by saying that the presenters presented so well that if you are not having a document in front of us, we fail to understand whether they're doing well or not. They presented so well. If their presentation goes hand in glove with the work on the ground, really, we need to say that they are reforming 100%. The other issue that I observed is the issue of consistency in writing their report. In some pages, there are abbreviations without the explanation. In some, there are abbreviations with explanation. And to my understanding, if you are writing a report, because you are not writing for the people who sit in that department or that portfolio committee. You need to establish a way of explaining what you are saying by that particular application. There is an issue of community conversation. I don't know as to how are they doing it. Like in social development, when they do this community conversation or community dialogue, they first go and try in that particular community in order to get exactly what is needed or what are the challenges in that particular world or community. With agriculture, I'm not so sure whether they are taking that in consideration or they just go out in having that in order to reach the target that has been set. Again, there is this issue of community centers. I think it is there in our manifesto that we need to have community centers in all our wards. But according to their plan, in 15-16 there's nothing. But 16-17 is only one plan. Then 17-18 is two. I'm trying to check as to how long are we going to take to implement this community actions in all the ones as it has been stated by our manifesto, by the our president. Again, in program the vote, I was having a problem here reading or following the presenter was in. The vote is too small. I tried it in my spectacles, I said, can please change the time for us to be able to go with you while presenting. There are issues of the targets in other program one. The one of the PWD and the 50%. I wanted to check with the department, did you achieve the 2% of the PWD? And this one of the 50%, 50% of that. Is the 50% your 100% or is the 50% of a certain number? It's like the 30% of the, I think for the essence. Is the 30% of what? I think it's like the 10% that the sum of the numbers here, we can't follow them up because we don't have each explanation. Because if we were to say the SMS is for the 50%. If it's 50% for 15-16 and you are paying again 50% in 16-17, that 50 is that the last number that you have in the department to say if you achieve 50% it means you are a par or what. I think we need to understand that also.
Thank you very much.
So, the issue of summit, somewhere in that the first document that I presented, it did talk about the provincial summits that were collected. And it stated here that it's Northwest and Hampton. I wanted to check as to whether even to other provinces did they went on to hold a provincial summit or they didn't, or how was their plan.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. I'm now giving an opportunity to the department to respond. Something you hope.
Thank you, Chair. I would ask the department what plans is in place to ensure that funding are channeled to fund more transform projects rather than apartheid symbols. And number two, what is the department planning to do to ensure that there is no corruption? And then number three, tell us what is going on APEC. So this committee approved this project without the APEC of PESHAL. and also the issues with informing the committee, who is the appointed CFO, as you mentioned earlier on. The person that in New Week and all internal processes have been followed, who is the new CFO? We want to know the committee. And the last one, can the acting PD confirm that the purging of senior management staff? Oh, I just stop this one.
Okay. Honorable, did you want to say anything? Yeah.
No, sir. I think you did ask this question in terms of what we got on the auditor's test yesterday on program 1 and 2, because in terms of the sample, they focus on 3 and 4. So those even are the one and 2. If you know that issue of governance and the other core of the department, I just wanted to ask the department what honorable Makhonele just asked in terms of the last recommendation of the AG, especially on administration. On the management point, letter point, how far did you clean or remedy the situation? Is everything fine now, or you're going to achieve the, I can say, you're going to achieve what the auditor wants to see and what to take the department forward? Because it doesn't mean that maybe if the auditor didn't touch, then into everything is fine, because we're not even thinking about that.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Department, Member.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. I'd like to cluster the issues so then, and I hope that I can be able to then to cover all the critical elements, and then as my colleagues would be then covering where there's gaps. So, firstly, let me just deal with the audit issues. At least we did not, as a department, get a disclaimer, as Honorable Majumini said, but at least we started with the qualified and we want to go back to at least make sure that on the financial side we get that clean, and then we can move on to make sure the compliance and the performance. At least the only entity that has been in this in efforts was PENSAP, which is also a problem, and will then cover the question that you asked in terms of not sending things from PENSAP. So, coming from a qualified audit, then there were reasons given, and they were outlined. And then our task was to be able to deal with these issues, corrective issues, and correct them. And so the process that we did is then allocate the issues to the managers and be able to make sure that we keep them accountable. And there were transversal issues such as policy issues. There was no updated supply chain management policy. And now it is done. So the impact, why it took long, is because we really did need to address some of the core issues. That would also talk to the issue of artists. For example, when we procure artists, you cannot go on a 3-quote. If you have a show and you know that human Fiela has written Stimela and we want to have him sing there because it's going to address a particular social cohesion aspect, we want to then be able to have the ability to get human Fiela. So we have then provided in our policy, and which then can be even be used by other departments to increase opportunities for the artists, not to be saying we're going to go on the 3-quote basis. However, so you can't test the market in terms of, because you, there's only one you. So you can't really then go test market. But what we've done is say you need to test the market in terms of the price. Because if you come and say, for this one performance, I'm going to charge you 20 million, we're not going to go with him. No matter how much you want him. But you're also not going to receive 200 rand. So then what we have put for in our policy is that we need to be able to have a test of the price, but in order to do this, we need to create an average of what is the average price given the level of artists. Not all artists are the same, but we can be able to almost say this level of artists should more or less so, and this level of artists would be more or less so. This is an exercise that is also done by the chief procurement officer across other commodities. So we can actually help the chief procurement officer of Treasury to be able to, in the arts and culture, once we are able to establish almost the price ranges, then when you look at testing markets, it enables that distinction. That tells the point that you can then use that as a reference. And if you are paying below that, then you can actually then assist her protection coming, because then saying, no, you cannot be able to charge this price. And also, that's why we also coming up with the Zanzi Golden Market. And the end aim, all procurement that relates to arts and culture must come through this. Because if it's decentralized through this and you have a central price, you will not have chance to be able to pay a lower price. So there are those elements that we're going to be building to be able to deal with the price issue. So the procurement policy is now done, and it will help to decrease the irregular expenditure. Because one of the irregular expenditure is because you don't say how you're going to deal with the particular issue, how you're going to deal with unsolicited bids, and so forth. So we've done that. It's now effective. Now the next step would be training people and holding them accountable. And also, when you've looked at the rates of deviation and the imperil of new irregular expenditure, it's decreased. What we're having is an overhang from the past irregular expenditure. So there is progress, and this progress was also tested by internal audit. So managers did not say, yeah, we're 8% done in dealing with this thing. The internal auditor came and said, have you actually is it done? Do you have evidence that it's done? And so the auditor general would then provide a third assurance when they now do their final check, because there's always a finding that says, how has the department responded to past management letter points that were raised? So we're not 100% there, because there's still issues. But what we try to do is we try to say, what are the root causes, and the procurement policy, supply chain management policy, was one of the root causes. So we've got the policy. But we still have capacity issues in terms of, you know, the people already within supply chain management. So that's the next step that we are actually dealing with. But of course, you have to apply appropriate measures. You need to have them trained, or if they're not really geared to that, then there are processes, because you cannot just move people or fire people, because you also don't want to create increase the statistics of unemployed, but also say, can we redeploy them where they are best suited in order to be able to add that, so that there are those processes that we have to go through. On the issue of consultants as well, we've been able to make progress, and we haven't renewed any contractors, in line also with the labor relations, say, regularize these appointments into full-time employees. So I would implore the members to also check. In this week, we're going to be advertising positions in helping fill these vacancies. So there is some progress, but it has taken time, because we needed to make sure that we address the root causes. Because I know quick wins or quick fixes sometimes, so you do need to apply your mind to be able to look at the root causes. And things of, now let's talk about the percentages. Now, to be clear, there is employment equity percentages, there is procurement targets, and there are targets that we set ourselves on our programs that are not legislated. Now, the issue raised by Honorable Makondo on the, in terms of the target of 50% and on the target 50%. Now it is legislated by the Employment Equity Act to say at each and every level, at senior management level, you have 50%, at middle management, you have 80%, at junior management level, so those are statutory targets. So depending on how many people you've employed, you always have to be able to meet 50%. So, for those people that you appointed, one of the DG Corporate Services is a lady, and the chief, the CFO, is a gentleman, so who has been able to maintain it courage. And of course, you know, sometimes you build up and then you do get vacancy. So you always try to manage it. So currently, given the numbers that we have 54%. So we are slightly above that. So we make sure that we don't go below. Now, that deals with employment equity target. And in employment equity target, it also has people with disabilities, and Conrad will be able to give you what is the current performance against the 2% target. Now, when it comes to procurement targets, now, there's an overall target that looks at your overall BE performance, and that is 70%, which means that it's a much broader target. Now, with the new broad-based economic empowerment code, government was not required previously to have the performance of these targets, but now we have taken, say, there's no legislation that says this is how government would comply with these targets. But we've gone an extra mile because we know it's going to come at some point. So let's take the lead and be able to make sure that we prepare ourselves to make sure that we are able to meet the 70% target. And for the black woman, it's also segmented for the black woman target to say, and it's easy also to define because we know what is a black woman-owned company. There are codes that define it very clearly. Now, there are targets as well for small businesses, and there's no target on the procurement side for the union. And there's no target for people with disabilities. Because those targets are set by the Department of Trade and Industry. So they haven't been able to clarify how you define youth, how you prove a youth company. Because now, today I might be a youth, but 5 years later I might not meet the requirement. But now, if you go into a 5-year contract, that you lose the youthness, what does it do to your procurement? So there are a lot of division issues that we are not in a position to be able to sort out. Because once you say, you may have a target for a youth company, then the company says, okay, prove it to me that I'm a youth company. And from an audit perspective, it's a nightmare. There's no one who can, in this country, tell you what is a youth company that can prove by auditors. So, and you know, it's not a vessel yet that we can be able to. So, what we've done, which is not required, but say we need to think ahead, in line with the radical economic transformation and inclusive growth, we, in our program, now we have these targets for women, for youth, for people with disabilities. So if we're looking at the MGE project, and we're then saying, but you know what, this is not helping us to meet our women targets, we're not going to give funding to it. It might be a good project, but if we are able, we have to apply our minds to say, how much is the impact of jobs? If all else is equal between two projects and you have to define who you're going to give money to, you give it to the one that is women-owned, that is youth-owned, that has disability. But also, and we have to communicate this, that's where we're lacking, definitely, that we encourage people who are meeting these criteria to come and apply, and we will be able to give them preference in terms of the target. So it's not necessarily said it's a quota, it's a target because you can even go above the target. And if we don't, the performance management system of the department in Monica's deliverables is she has to answer to say, why are you not meeting this target? And she has to be able to make sure that the assistants, that people know about it, because if she doesn't meet the target, there would be consequences when you do the performance evaluation. So that should help clarify the three different targets. So when we don't have procurement targets, it's because there's nothing we can be able to actually do about it. But the ones where we can be able to do, we have covered women, we have covered youth, and we have covered people with disabilities. And then, in terms of looking at the, and I think that deals with the funding model. Now, a very good question around the entities, you said, how do we monitor their BEE implementation? Currently, we're not good at doing that. And so we need to beef up on that ability to then be able to now help them and also use that as a measure to say, what are you contributing? So that is where we're not doing well. And then there was an issue in the audit outcomes on asset management. So we've also been able to deal with that through clarifying the policy. And the policy, because there is a change in the standard chart of accounts of Treasury, we had then updated the policy to talk to that. But then we can be able to identify, here's an asset, but what price do you use for the asset? Do you use the invoice cost, or do you use the cost to get the asset to work? So we have clarified those issues and updated them, and now we've been able to do that. Which means that our asset register, we already had an asset register, but there were those little issues that we needed to clarify, and we have signed the policy now effective from 1st of April that will clarify that. And now the critical thing is the training and the implementation and then being able to see what is being done.
I realize that we are going to cover all the questions, but I think time is against us. If we can just park the questions, and to remind the department also that this is about passing the budget, and you need to convince this committee to be able to convince the House to pass the budget. And in our meeting next week, on the 25th, we will give you an opportunity at the start of the meeting before we let the session about an hour. And come back to us and convince us that these entities are going to add their needs to the overall goal that we want to achieve as a country. That you want to achieve as the department first, that the government wants to achieve, that the country wants to achieve. And give us a comfort that you are monitoring. Give us comfort that you are going to monitor. How are you going to monitor this entity? Because we know that the bulk of budget goes to the entity, and we know the mess that is there in the entity. I don't want to believe at that point now. But on Tuesday, give us your program that is going to ensure that the entities deliver on their mandate, and that the money that we are going to pass is going to do exactly what you are saying the entities are supposed to do. So, and the questions that are outstanding, you will respond to them on Tuesday. But please, we let you and our money committee management work on this, you know, on this template. You will have to work on the template in the meantime to see how we can be assisted, how we can assist each other. Because the portfolio committee, we want to assist them as possible to ensure that you achieve your goals as the department. Because, you know, if the department achieves, government achieves, if the government achieves, you know, the whole society achieves. So I think it's important for us to work together. So let me thank you very much. Let me thank the honorable members for asking. We always say that oversight is about asking the right questions. So I want to thank the honorable members for the questions that they have asked and the interest that they are showing, you know, in the money of the department. I would like to thank you as well for your presentation. And, you know, you don't personalize anything. We are asking questions because we want to know. So I would like to thank you very much. I regret that you closed.
Thank you.